You're listening to WIN, the Workers' Independent News Service. I'm Jesse Russell.
And I'm Doug Cunningham.
By the end of this year, the country's second largest telephone company plans to eliminate 10,000 U.S. jobs, reducing its workforce by more than 6%. The cuts at SBC come on top of 7,000 jobs already lost this year through what the company calls normal attrition. The company is adjusting to a changing market where more and more people are replacing their landlines with cell phones and internet calling. To date, SBC has sent more than 4,500 jobs overseas.
George Bush will remain in the White House, and with Republican control of both the House and the Senate and no concerns regarding re-election, he has free rein to implement campaign promises of a so-called ownership society. That buzzword stands in for a host of policies Republicans are itching to thrust upon America.
I'd say that the hallmark of the ownership society is privatizing Social Security.
Gretchen Young is the Vice President of Government Affairs for Aon Consulting.
The two other major elements in the benefits arena are health savings accounts, where individuals take more responsibility, and then there's also an element in the retirement part of the agenda, which would emphasize something called a lifetime savings account.
Jack Minnis is an economist.
Everything that Bush has done in the 3.5 years he's been in office is to curtail or suppress consumer income. And how one gets from lack of income to ownership is a mystery unless he is prepared to legalize bank robbery.
According to the Tax Foundation analysis of IRS statistics, 58 million income-earning households pay no income taxes, so a health care tax break doesn't help low-income workers.
Workers are returning to the casinos in Atlantic City after more than a month of inability to reach a compromise. Employees from Harrah's Entertainment accepted a contract and ended their strike when the company began hiring replacement workers. Represented by the Hotel and Restaurant Employees Union, the workers were demanding a contract that would expire at the same time as those in Las Vegas. The casino chain refused to back down, as it would have given the union massive bargaining power by shutting down casinos in two major markets. The union says that Harrah's blinked first, as the company gave concessions on the most important issues, such as pay and health care.
Here's today's Dow Bob report. There were 708 mass layoff actions in September of this year. Total number of workers laid off in September from those actions, nearly 69,000. From January through September of 2004, there were 11,725 mass layoff actions, hitting 1,187,546 workers. Manufacturing had 27% of all those mass layoff actions and 37% of the workers laid off. The numbers come from the Bureau of Labor Statistics.
You've been listening to WIN, the Workers' Independent News Service. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
What does corporate power have to do with disarmament? How does working for racial justice affect trade agreements? And what do they all have to do with the Cuban blockade? Having trouble making a connection? It's our specialty. The Women's International League for Peace and Freedom, for 88 years, connecting the issues for democracy and social justice. Why don't you connect with us? WILPF.org or call 215-563-7110.
Time for another report from the wide, 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 wild world of sports. Today's feature, where are we? I don't mean where does your team rank in the standings. In today's corporatized sports world, the question of where are we is a literal one, as in what city are we in? Stadiums, arenas, and so forth no longer bear recognizable names, but instead are branded with corporate logos that are anywhere and nowhere USA. For example, SBC. What the hell is it? It's the nondescript logo of a telephone company that stretches from Texas to Michigan to California. So if you're at SBC Park, where are you? The San Francisco Giants recently sold the name of their ballpark to this Anyplace Corporation. There's also the SBC Center. Where are you? At the arena of the San Antonio Spurs basketball team. In either case, SBC's bland corporate logo tells you nothing about the team or the city. It's just another symbol for corporate money. AmeriQuest Field, FedEx Forum, Pepsi Center, American Airlines Arena, Wachovia Center, Invesco Field, Reliance Stadium, Nationwide Arena, M&T Bank Stadium, Staples Center, Phillips Arena. Where are we? In pro sports, more than half of the facilities, most built with taxpayer funds, now have corporate names plastered all over them. The corporations have paid $3.6 billion to team owners to put their brands on these places. Money that, believe it or not, is tax deductible for the corporation, so we subsidize the branding. The corporate rationale is that naming deals are good advertising. Continually seeing our name, says a spokesman for Petco, which recently bought the naming rights to the ballpark of the San Diego Padres, will click with people and say, I want to shop there. This is Jim Hightower saying, oh yeah, after watching a Padres game, I always say, I think I'll run out to Petco and buy a rat terrier.
What does corporate power have to do with disarmament? How does working for racial justice affect trade agreements? And what do they all have to do with the Cuban blockade? Having trouble making a connection? It's our specialty. The Women's International League for Peace and Freedom, for 88 years, connecting the issues for democracy and social justice. Why don't you connect with us? WILPF.org or call 215-563-7110.
You can make.
It's a wild day here at the stock market. Let's talk to some traders. How are you doing?
I'm taking a shelling, but I'm still gelling.
Okay, and how about you?
I'm gelling and selling. Gelling and selling.
My trades are smelling.
Mine too, but who cares?
We're gelling.
Are you gelling yet? Dr. Scholl's massaging gel insoles are made from the softest gel ever created. If you and your feet don't feel outrageously comfortable, you get your money back. Guaranteed. Are you gelling? Dr. Scholl.
He's the man who uncovers corporate lies, exposes political corruption, and has a clear vision of what America could become. Here's Tom Hartman.
And greetings, friends, patriots, lovers of democracy, truth, and justice, believers in peace, freedom, and the American way. Tom Hartman here, broadcasting live with you, coast to coast, on terrestrial radio stations, beaming down from outer space on the Sirius satellite radio system, and streaming around the planet on radiopower.org, which had been down the last couple days of last week. They are back up. Welcome back. And also, of course, on cable radio network. So, welcome to our program, Archives of White Rose Society. Archives of specific show pieces and rants you can find at TomHartman.com. And also, if you want to drop into our chat room, our live chat room, where you'll find some of the most fascinating discussions on the Internet, go to TomHartman.com and just click live chat. It'll take you over to the Democratic Forum on CompuServe, which hosts the program. Letter to the Comptroller General of the United States of America, Mr. Walker. Mr. David M. Walker, specifically. This, a letter from Congressman John Conyers, Democrat of Michigan, Gerald Nadler, and Robert Wexler, ranking member, members of Congress, House Judiciary Committee, Subcommittee on the Constitution. We write with an urgent request, these three congressmen wrote, an urgent request that the Government Accountability Office immediately undertake an investigation of the efficacy of voting machines and new technologies used in the 2004 election, how election officials responded to difficulties they encountered, and what we can do in the future to improve our election systems and administration. He goes on to say, we are literally receiving additional reports every minute. And, you know, and then they go through some of the problems that they're facing. I wrote about this weekend on commondreams.org, and it got spread all over the Internet. An article about Florida. Some, you know, interesting things. This was something that wasn't in my article. I just got this morning from Mark Crispin Miller, the fellow who wrote Cruel and Unusual, I believe, was the title. We had Mark on our program recently. He's written several excellent books about George W. and the administration. In Florida, just a few things to consider. In Florida, and of course, this is just one of many states that have, you know, computer-controlled machines and whatnot, where there are a lot of substantial questions being asked. But in Florida, the total voter turnout in Collier County, Let's just take a look at a few counties. Collier County, total voter turnout, 127,409 people. So it's 127,000 people and change. Guess how many voted for the president? 127,000 people showed up.
Guess how many people voted for the president, according to the official count from Collier County? 128,352. That's right. 128,352 people voted for the president, but 127,000 showed up. In Duval County, 379,257 people showed up, but 379,614 votes were cast for President George W. Bush. In Glades County, 3,446 people showed up. 4,188 votes were counted from George W. Bush. In Highlands County, voter turnout was 33,996, but 41,491 votes were cast for George W. In Lake County, 123,751 people showed up, but 123,938 voted for George W. In Miami-Dade County, total voter turnout, 716,000 and change. Number of votes counted for George W. Bush, 756,000 and change. That's right, 716,574 people showed up. 768,553 votes were cast for the president. In Okaloosa County, 89,485 folks showed up. 89,707 votes cast for the president. Orange County voter turnout, 386,104. 387,752 cast for the president. And on it goes. Osceola County, Leon County, Palm Beach County, Volusia County. Frankly, I have to tell you, I haven't yet, of everything I'm going to share with you today, this is the one thing that I haven't yet verified. It's the most startling. I just got this. But what it's an indication of, apparently, is this very, very significant trend that's happening in Florida that I wrote about this weekend. And and one part of the trend, I mean, you know, this looks like just pretty overt voter fraud. But the other one was, there was an analysis done by Kathy Dopp and a bunch of other folks on the internet. It's an ongoing thing. It's really kind of a committee, a group that have gotten together to do this. To look at the vote for Bush or for Kerry based on what kinds of machines were used to count the vote. And interestingly enough, they discovered that when the OptiScan machines, the machines where you don't think you're voting on a machine. In fact, a lot of absentee votes are done this way. You fill out a ballot where you fill in the little circle, you know, you darken the circle or you finish the line by blackening in the broken arrow. Well, those are fed through a scanner, which is hooked up to a PC. In most cases, a Windows PC. In most cases, a Windows PC connected to a modem. And oddly enough, what they found was that although the touchscreen voting machines, you know, where there were a lot of Republicans registered, there seemed to be a lot of Republicans voting, a lot of Democrats registered, a lot of Democrats voting. But in those counties where the optical scan machines were being used, the vote swung more heavily toward Bush from the number of people who were registered that you would expect. This is a fascinating one. But I've got to say, in the context of all of this, that it's important that we go a step beyond this. Take heart. Take heart. This is the most important message I can share with you today. I mean, of course, we are going to get to the bottom of this stuff. If there's been a crime committed, it needs to be prosecuted. If there hasn't been a crime committed, you know, we need to be, whether or not there was a crime committed. We need to be planning strategy for the next 2 years, the next 4 years, the next 20 years. We need to be building democratic institutions. We need to be fighting back against this corporatist agenda, what Mussolini called fascism, of handing the government over to private corporations. I mean, handing our vote over to private corporations? Can you imagine? You've heard me rant about this enough. You know that rant by heart, most of you, I'm sure, but I mean, there is this thing called the commons, the stuff that we all own. And the most important of the commons is not the road system or the sky, you know, the airways system or the radio waves. The most important of the commons is not our police departments or our fire departments. The most important of the commons is not even our government itself, which is certainly part of the commons. The most important part of the commons is our vote. And why have we handed this over to private corporations? This, in my opinion, is the greatest crime against democracy. But I want to say, take heart. Democracy has come under assault before. We've survived, and the nation actually became stronger for the struggle. Thank you. For example, in 1798, this was a major crisis year for democracy, and those who, like Thomas Jefferson, believed the United States was a shining light of liberty. It was a miserable year. This was the year John Adams, who was then president, Jefferson was then vice president, pushed through Congress by a single vote the Alien and Sedition Acts and was aggressively putting into jail newspaper editors who disagreed with him. First guy he threw into jail was Benjamin Franklin Bach. He did this even before the law was put into place. Benjamin Franklin Bach was Ben Franklin's grandson. He ran a newspaper called the Aurora in Massachusetts, and he wrote an editorial in which he called John Adams old, querulous, bald, blind, crippled, toothless Adams. For that, he was put in prison. Jefferson was wretched. He left town the day that Adams signed the acts as a symbolic gesture. But as vice president, he didn't have the power to stop it. They even imprisoned a member of Congress, Matthew Lyon, congressman from Vermont, imprisoned him for daring in the floor of the House of Representatives to suggest that Adams' agenda, along with that of Roger Griswold of Connecticut, that Adams' agenda was to favor the rich over the working people. Matthew Lyon of Vermont ran for re-election from his jail cell in Vergennes and won. 2 weeks before the Alien and Sedition Acts were passed, June 1st, 1798, Thomas Jefferson sat down with a heavy heart and yet with hope and wrote a letter to his friend John Taylor, another Virginian who had... Another Democrat, small d, although he was also a Democrat, large d. This was now the formation was happening of the Democratic Republican Party, which dropped the name Republican in the 1830s and is to this day still known as the Democratic Party. And he said in his letter, he says, it's true that we're completely under the saddle of Massachusetts and Connecticut. Massachusetts wanted a theocracy. They wanted religious rule in the United States. Connecticut had become the bastion of the rich. As I mentioned, Roger Griswold actually beat Matthew Lyon with a cane on the floor of the House of Representatives for daring to say that Griswold, Connecticut's Griswold, was representing the interests of the wealthy over that of the average people. It's true that we're completely under the saddle of Massachusetts and Connecticut, Jefferson wrote to Taylor, his friend and compatriot, and that they ride us very hard, cruelly insulting our feelings as well as exhausting our strength and subsistence. Their natural friends, the three other eastern states, join them from a sort of family pride, and they have the art to divide certain other parts of the Union so as to make use of them to govern the whole. This is not new, Jefferson added. It's an old practice of despots to use a part of the people to keep the rest in order. And those, Jefferson wrote, who have once got an ascendancy and possessed themselves of all the resources of the nation, their revenues and offices, have immense means for maintaining that advantage. But, he added, our present situation is not a natural one. In the next sentence, he said, but still I repeat it, this is not the natural state. His next paragraph, be this as it may, in every free and deliberating society, there must from the nature of man be opposite parties and violent dissensions, discords, and one of these, for the most part, must prevail over the other for a shorter period of time or longer. Perhaps this party division is necessary to induce each other to watch and delate to the people the proceedings of the other. But will the evil stop there? Finally, Jefferson wrote, a little patience, and we shall see the reign of witches pass over, their spells dissolved, and the people recovering their true sight, restoring their government to its true principles. It is true that in the meantime we are suffering deeply in spirit and incurring the horrors of a war and long oppressions of enormous public debt. If the game runs sometimes against us at home, we must have patience till luck turns. And then we shall have an opportunity of winning back the principles we have lost. For this is a game where principles are the stake. Our mantra for this month. It's the Tom Hartman Program, 20 minutes past the hour.
I guess I better let the dog in.
Like the small dog that rules the house, Small Dog Electronics is the small computer company that really rules when it comes to customer service. Small Dog Electronics is your authorized Apple reseller in Wakefield, Vermont. Sure, you can buy your computer out of a catalog, but how do you know you're really getting what you want or what you need? At Small Dog, they don't work on commission. Their only motivation is making sure you're a happy customer. Put your business on the leading edge with the world's fastest computer, the new Macintosh G5. You'll finish the job ahead of the pack, and automatic security updates lock out viruses. That's speed and dependability that will keep you focused on your customers instead of sitting on hold with tech support.
I guess you want to get on the couch, huh?
Like the small dog who everybody makes room for, Small Dog Electronics is big on customer service. Small Dog Electronics. Check them out on the web at smalldog.com or at their showroom on Route 100 in Waitsfield.
No way. You're not getting on the bed.
Visit iowapeace.com for books on justice and peace. The Last Liberal Outlaw is Mike Palasek's new novel. Chuck Gregory with BlueEar.com had this to say. Palasek is at his best when writing about small-town America. It's a place he clearly loves, even as he pokes fun at its quirks and reveals the sickness that lies just below the surface. It's a place he knows, and he shares his knowledge in delightfully original ways, even as he cries out for change. We haven't had a writer like Palasek since Kurt Vonnegut was at his peak. Mike is an Iowa author, former federal prisoner for peace, small-town newspaper reporter, seminarian, and nominee for the U.S. House of Representatives in the Iowa Democratic Party 2000 election. For more information and more about Mike's other novels, visit iowapeace.com. The revolution won't be televised, but you can read about it. The Last Liberal Outlaw, A New American Revolution, is happening in the heartland.
For more than 27 years, the progressive magazine In These Times has provided groundbreaking coverage of movements for social, environmental, and economic justice. Author and broadcast personality Studs Terkel calls In These Times his bi-weekly tonic. In These Times features award-winning reporting and analysis of national and international news. Find In These Times on your newsstand or visit us online at www.inthesetimes.com or call 1-800-827-0270. 1-800-827-0270.
Tonight on American Dreams, a family strength is tested.
I don't think your brother's coming home.
And an explosive all-new Law & Order criminal intent. A family's dead. Car accident or murder. This is one mother of a story. Then, an NBC event. Crossing Jordan teams up with a cast of Las Vegas. Two shows, one murder.
What happens in Vegas?
Apparently dies in Boston.
American Dreams, Law & Order criminal intent, and Crossing Jordan. NBC tonight.
Who is it?
Special delivery.
Who?
Pizza Man.
Hey, you're not the pizza man. You're the cable guy. Again.
Price Patrol.
No, you're not. I can see your van. You're the cable company. I'm not going to let you raise my rates again. I'm calling American Satellite to get a DirecTV system.
Presidential candidate.
Are you going to offer me over 125 digital quality channels for as little as $39.99 a month, including my local channels?
Ice Cream Man.
Yeah, like that's going to work. If I call American Satellite right now, I can get a four-room DirecTV system, including professional installation free. Can you beat that?
Pizza Man.
You already tried that. Well, that's it. I'm calling to get my DirecTV system.
Call 800-505-1546. That's 800-505-1546. For new customers only. Annual programming commitment required. Ask how you can get your first 6 months for only $29.99 a month, a $60 value. Offer ends July 17th. Call now. 800-505-1546.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
What a friend we have in W. Upright, strong, and resolute. God wished him to be our leader. The court could not but follow suit.
Oh, what a friend we have in W.
Righteousness has filled our nation.
And welcome back. Tom Hartman here with you, 24 and a half minutes past the hour. 1-866-889-8894, our telephone number if you'd like to weigh in on the issues. I just have to share with you one more time. We'll make this our quote for the day. Thomas Jefferson, in the dark days of 1798, as the nation was facing the same or a similar issue. I mean, really, it was the Patriot. This was the first iteration of the Patriot Act. A little patience, Jefferson wrote, and we shall see the reign of witches pass over. Their spells dissolved, and the people recovering their true sight, restoring their government to its true principles. It is true that in the meantime we are suffering deeply in spirit and incurring the horrors of a war and long oppressions of enormous public debt. If the game runs sometimes against us at home, we must have patience till luck turns. And then we shall have an opportunity of winning back the principles we have lost. For this is a game where principles are the stake. 1-866-889-8894. Bill in Santa Fe, New Mexico on the line. Hey, Bill, welcome to the program.
Yeah, hey, Tom. I voted on a paper ballot, and we filled in these arrows.
Right.
And it was a pretty big sheet of paper. It's bigger than 8x11. And then it's fed into a machine. Is that one of these problematic scanners that you're talking about?
That's an Optiscan machine, yep. Diebold makes many of those. And that machine, that scanner, is a computer that has to be programmed. You have to program it to say, okay, if somebody's filled in the third arrow, that means George Bush. If they've filled in the fourth arrow, that means John, you know, or whatever. And then the scanner is a computer, and then it also feeds, each one of those scanners feeds into a central tabulator computer, which is just a Windows-based PC on a modem. Yes. In fact, that's what Bev Harris hacked with Howard Dean on national television.
Yikes. So what kind of machine or ballot should we be moving towards?
Well, frankly, in my opinion, if we're going to use machines, and you know, there's a pretty good argument to be made actually for using them, they should be machines that are owned and programmed by government employees with open source software that everybody can see, on that are not connected to the internet and not connected to modems or are in a totally secure environment. And in a way that is absolutely and completely transparent to all of us, and every single person who votes on a machine, not only does that machine produce a paper ballot, which can be used for any kind of a recount easily, but also provides a receipt to the voter.
Yeah.
Very straightforward process. And this is not rocket science, Bill. This is not rocket science at all.
Right. What groups are working on this, Tom?
You know, at the moment, frankly, I would say probably Rush Holt. There's a bunch of members of Congress. There's, you know, nearly 100 members of Congress have signed Rush Holt's bill to require much of what I've suggested. He's not actually suggesting that the government own and program the machines. I think that we must go to that. We must, you know, why on God's earth are we having private corporations handling our vote in secret and then telling us what our vote was? Why? It makes no sense to me. And why have the Republicans fought for 2 years, Tom DeLay and Denny Hastert, for 2 years, fought the efforts of Rush Holt? And he actually has a couple of Republicans signed on with this thing, but mostly it's all Democrats who have signed on to support his bill, and there's a similar one in the Senate that's co-sponsored by Hillary Clinton. Why have the Republicans fought for 2 years to prevent there from being an auditable paper trail to these machines? It's nuts. But in my opinion, the larger issue is, why do we have corporations in the voting booth at all? Why are they the ones receiving our votes, not, you know, government officials who are responsible to we the people, civil servants whose motive is to get the vote right, not to make a profit?
Yeah. So, and all these other shenanigans, like ripping up the registrations and the 10-hour waits.
Oh, there's a million things. I mean, that's what John Conyers was writing his letter about. There's just a million things, all kinds of indications of voter fraud. This could be huge. And we need to get corporations out of this process. That's the first and foremost. 29 minutes past the hour. It's the Tom Hartman Program. You're listening to the True People's Radio.
Hi, I'm David Orrick. In vacuums, bagless is a dirty word. In fact, they're filthy. A leading consumer testing magazine warns, if you're sensitive to dust, avoid bagless vacuums. My newest hypoallergenic 8-pound Orrick XL uses triple-wall disposable filter bags. Try my new vacuum free for 30 days. Call 1-800-989-4200, 1-800-989-4200. Orrick, the clean alternative to bagless vacuum.
pop and not-so-pop culture, democracy, and the news of the day. This is the Tom Hartman Program.
You're listening to WIN, the Workers' Independent News Service. I'm Jesse Russell.
And I'm Doug Cunningham.
By the end of this year, the country's second largest telephone company plans to eliminate 10,000 U.S. jobs, reducing its workforce by more than 6%. The cuts at SBC come on top of 7,000 jobs already lost this year through what the company calls normal attrition. The company is adjusting to a changing market where more and more people are replacing their landlines with cell phones and internet calling. To date, SBC has sent more than 4,500 jobs overseas.
George Bush will remain in the White House, and with Republican control of both the House and the Senate and no concerns regarding re-election, he has free rein to implement campaign promises of a so-called ownership society. That buzzword stands in for a host of policies Republicans are itching to thrust upon America.
I'd say that the hallmark of the ownership society is privatizing Social Security.
Gretchen Young is the Vice President of Government Affairs for Aon Consulting.
The two other major elements in the benefits arena are health savings accounts, where individuals take more responsibility, and then there's also an element in the retirement part of the agenda, which would emphasize something called a lifetime savings account.
Jack Minnis is an economist.
Everything that Bush has done in the 3.5 years he's been in office is to curtail or suppress consumer income. And how one gets from lack of income to ownership is a mystery unless he is prepared to legalize bank robbery.
According to the Tax Foundation analysis of IRS statistics, 58 million income-earning households pay no income taxes, so a health care tax break doesn't help low-income workers.
Workers are returning to the casinos in Atlantic City after more than a month of inability to reach a compromise. Employees from Harrah's Entertainment accepted a contract and ended their strike when the company began hiring replacement workers. Represented by the Hotel and Restaurant Employees Union, the workers were demanding a contract that would expire at the same time as those in Las Vegas. The casino chain refused to back down, as it would have given the union massive bargaining power by shutting down casinos in two major markets. The union says that Harrah's blinked first, as the company gave concessions on the most important issues, such as pay and health care.
Here's today's Dow Bob report. There were 708 mass layoff actions in September of this year. Total number of workers laid off in September from those actions, nearly 69,000. From January through September of 2004, there were 11,725 mass layoff actions, hitting 1,187,546 workers. Manufacturing had 27% of all those mass layoff actions and 37% of the workers laid off. The numbers come from the Bureau of Labor Statistics.
You've been listening to WIN, the Workers' Independent News Service. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
This is the Democracy Zone with Tom Hartman.
And welcome back. 27 minutes before the hour. Tom Hartman here with you. Half a dozen folks or so on our message board where you can just, you know, post a message anytime you want. It stays there. In fact, there's some, I don't know, 30, 40,000 messages there. I have mentioned that they've had difficulty getting into the live chat room on in the Democratic Forum on CompuServe. The forum did crash last Tuesday. Or was it Wednesday? One or the other. Maybe it was Wednesday. And it took a day to get it back up, and nobody's really sure exactly what happened. And my guess is that you've got to take a cookie from CompuServe.com to get into it. But keep posting. Let me know if you've got a problem, and we'll pass that along to the sysops there. We do have a bunch of folks in there right now, but if you're having a problem getting into the chat room, let us know. You can get to it off TomHartman.com. Just click live chat. 1-866-889-8894, our telephone number. A lot to talk about this week, an awful lot to talk about. I think it's so vital that we be revisiting the core principles of, I want to say historically the Democratic Party. Democratic Party, of course, has had a lot of kind of weird, historically, for some of its history, it was the party of slavery. So not necessarily to say the core principles of the Democratic Party, but the core principles really of democracy. of you know, democracy in a constitutionally limited republic, to say it in the politically correct way that will make conservatives happy. And what are moral values? You know, when I was walking out of the voting booth, if somebody came up to me and said, "Did you vote for moral values?" I would have thought, you know, that war in Iraq is immoral. Yes, I certainly voted for moral values in voting for John Kerry. So, you know, I'm just wondering if maybe there's a lot of misplaced hysteria around this. Maybe not. I don't know. We'll, you know, time will tell. But I think that it's important that we recapture the discussion of what's moral and what's not. Is it moral that we have people being cut off their pensions so that profits, so that corporations can become more profitable? Is it moral that we be breaking unions so that corporations can be more profitable? Is it moral that government is testing pesticides on kids with corporate money? Is it moral that our air is getting dirtier and our water is getting dirtier as a direct result of policies that George Bush has put into place in the last 3 years, that our forests are at risk? Is it moral that our children are in debt up to their eyeballs, even those children, even our grandchildren that are not yet born? I think these are really, really key moral issues. And frankly, I think they're more important as moral issues than whether or not gay people get married, regardless of what you think on that position. It's time, in my opinion, for progressives, liberals, and, yes, the Democratic Party to go back to using issues like these as moral issues. I mean, since Roosevelt, the Democratic Party has been, arguably with the exception of the Vietnam War, has been, Nixon, you know, carried that one on, has been the party of some of the most important and vital moral issues of our time. It was the party that brought us Social Security. It was the party that brought us the minimum wage over the objection of Republicans. It was the party that brought us Medicare over the objection of Republicans. It was the party that brought us environmental protection laws over the objection of Republicans. It was the party that brought us worker safety laws over the objection of Republicans. It was the party that brought us the 40-hour work week over the violent objection of Republicans. It was the party that gave us the right to unionize in 1935 with the Wagner Act over the objection of Republicans. These are moral issues. 1-866-889-8894 telephone number. Tony in Washington, D.C. on the line. Hey, Tony. How you doing today?
I'll try to speak up even though I got a sore throat. I got two issues. First, and I'll take my answer off the air. Who do you think will be the one to espouse those values that it seems like we always get a nominee who gets late in the game about telling people what's moral instead of being Bush-like or right-wing-like? You can't get up there and say, I too want to go ahead and go to war. Carl Rove said, well, I just flip the card and let's bring out one of those emotional issues, and that's the distinction.
Yeah, I understand what the Republicans have done in this election, and they've done it. Going all the way back to George Herbert Walker Bush using flag burning as a thing, is they've framed morality or patriotism, or both, in a very, very narrow way. In other words, they've taken control of the frame and they've taken control of the language, and we have to redefine the frame and the language.
And I'm saying also we must decide between, I forgot the people who they said in the Washington Post, I think somebody maybe from Iowa or Donna Brazile or somebody who won't play the politics of 17 states but 51 states.
Yeah.
And at least go, maybe not the South, because in my heart of hearts, I'm a black man, think that what they people call and state that they are for more value is because when they look into the Democratic Party, it's more people like myself or people of color. That's just a fact.
Yeah.
They will go ahead and say, we for this, we for that, we for gay marriage. No. I'm hearing from people all over the country saying that is a racial curtain that we must pull back. And also, we also must not concede to the people who are in Midwest
Are you saying, Tony, that the gay marriage issue, which I know in the African American community is not viewed favorably, mm-hmm. Was used by the Rove folks really in a racial way, as a way of dividing African Americans against themselves?
Well, we ate our own because all we had to do was take 30 pieces of silver.
There you go.
That's all you need.
Yeah. Yeah.
But also, we need to all and let go. Also, we need to have a consensus among the Greens, among the progressives, among the people who call themselves so-called Unitarian, maybe not Unitarian, but the Greens and progressives, that we must get on the bandwagon November 3rd to November 6th and beyond that. But first, we got to make a change November 6th, because we don't make a change in November 6th. We're, six people away from a veto-proof in Congress?
Yeah, no, we need to be making the change every single day, and it needs to include people of faith as well.
Absolutely.
Absolutely. Tony, thanks for the call.
Take care.
Appreciate it. You well said. It's always great to hear from you. You always always bring good insights to this program. 1-866-889-8894, our telephone number. And by the way, Tony, in answer to your first question, who's going to take over the Democratic Party? I don't have a clue. I'm not a Democrat. I'm not a Democratic Party insider. I wish them well. I believe that the only salvation for the Democratic Party is to move to the left, away from the Democratic Leadership Council and toward the principles of Franklin Roosevelt. The two Democratic presidents who have won in huge majorities. Bill Clinton never won more than 50% of the vote. The two Democratic presidents who have won in huge majorities, Franklin Roosevelt and Lyndon B. Johnson, did so after they initiated massive social programs. In Johnson's case, the Great Society. In Roosevelt's case, there were dozens of them, from Social Security to the Wagner Act and the right of unionization to the WPA, things like this. Massive social programs, and the people loved them for it. And in my opinion, if the Democratic Party doesn't go back to those roots, it's toast. 1-866-889-8894. Bob in Washington. Washington State? Washington, D.C.? Washington State. Hey, Bob.
Washington State, Tom, and I'm driving through Texas with my doors locked.
Oh, yeah, okay.
Wasn't that a wonderful quote from Thomas Jefferson?
It really was. I wrote it up as an op-ed for Common Dreams today. I don't know if they'll run it, because they run three of them from me in the last 5 days, and I don't think they want to turn it into the Tom Hartman page. But
you get the feeling that if he could step out of a time machine, that all he would need would be a new suit and a haircut, and he could go up on Capitol Hill and shame these people.
I agree. And that's why I wrote the book, What Would Jefferson Do? Because when you go back and you read his writings and you read the issues of the day, I mean, at that time, John Adams was using this XYZ affair where one of his envoys to France was approached in the middle of the night by three Frenchmen, who said that Napoleon was willing to basically bribe the President of the United States. And, John Adams. And it turned out, and they just wanted money. They wanted $300,000 in today's money. And it turned out that these guys had nothing to do with Napoleon. They had nothing to do with the French government. They were just a couple of hustlers who were hoping to get some money out of the these American hicks, right? That's how the French viewed our second president and his guys. These guys came back, and John Adams turned this thing into a huge national issue. He used it as a major campaign issue to say, the French are trying to corrupt our democratic process. We need to declare war on the French. And he just went through this whole, and people were actually getting ready for war with France when Jefferson came in as president. And it was because of a ginned-up, phonied excuse, war rhetoric that John Adams was doing. And Jefferson was who was vice president at the time, not because he was an ally of Adams, but because back then, whoever got the second largest number of votes became vice president. And Jefferson was trying to calm people down. So it's like the parallels are startling. They're absolutely startling.
Tom, where did you get that information about this voting in Florida? You stunned me.
Yeah, well, it stunned me too, and that's why I tossed in the caveat that I have not yet been able to verify that. Mark Crispin Miller sent that to me in an email this morning. He's an author who I respect. He didn't put a source on it, and so I'm going to do a little more digging on this one, because it's almost too good to be true, or too bad to be true.
When you got that information, like when you heard that there was more votes than there were people that were voting, did he say anything about how many votes there were for Kerry?
No. And that's the thing. I mean, this is very incomplete information. I got it 20 minutes before I went on the air. And Bob, I should even apologize. I probably shouldn't have used it. I probably should have sat on it until tomorrow because it's unverified. So, you know, put that in the category of rumor right now. What I can tell you for sure that's not rumor is that in Florida, those counties that used optical scan machines shifted heavily toward Bush, and those counties that didn't did not shift heavily towards Bush. And it had nothing to do with large county, small county. It had nothing to do with Dixiecrats. It had nothing to do – all it had to do with was what kind of machine the vote was being counted on. And that makes me very suspicious.
Well, okay, thanks. Part of me wants it to be true, and part of it doesn't.
Yeah, same here.
Let us know, will you?
You betcha. You betcha. Thanks, Bob. I appreciate the call. 1-866-889-8894. John in Pennsylvania is on the line. Hey, John, welcome to the show.
Hi, Tom. How are you?
I'm great, but I'll get better. How about you, John?
I'm okay, and I'm sure I'll get better.
There you go.
My basic questions all center around the focus of the Democratic Party. I have several different questions that kind of bop around a little bit. One of them is why, when it comes to fiscal policy, domestic policy, and a lot of resonating domestic issues, why do the Democrats not adapt Ralph Nader's fervor when it comes to being anti-corporate, when it comes to showing people how, you know, the fish stinks from the head and not from the bottom, and to shift Northern Republicans and a lot of moderates who sit there and want small government and want this and that, shift their anger away from the people who are really not causing the problems and towards the people who are. Why is there not this union or this acceptance of Ralph Nader's position on fiscal policy? I mean, do you have any, like, real insight into that?
Yeah,
from, like,
sure.
From, Howard Dean or John Kerry?
No, well, I can tell you my own observation for what it's worth, and that is that the Democratic Party had been the anti-corporate party. That's what Franklin Roosevelt ran on. That's what Harry Truman ran on. And so the corporations really started getting in bed with the Republicans big time, and it got Eisenhower into power, and it got Nixon into power, and so the Democrats, to some extent, under LBJ and Kennedy, started being more friendly with corporations. They stopped the anti-corporate rhetoric of FDR. It totally vanished in the 60s. And then Bill Clinton came along, and Clinton and Gore started the Democratic Leadership Council and said, you know, let's get in bed with the corporations. I mean, they've got the money. They're giving all this money to the Republicans. We should get some of that money. And that was a large part of how Bill Clinton won, was he was able to raise corporate funds. And so, you know, they made this deal with the devil. Howard Dean now has come along and proven, and the Kerry campaign followed on it to show that it wasn't just a phenomenon isolated to Howard Dean, proven that with using the Internet now, you don't need a corporation anymore to fund a campaign. You can go directly to the people. And so this is this moment. There's this window of opportunity for the Democratic Party to return to its roots, to its Franklin Roosevelt roots, and say, we are the party of the people, not of the corporate elites, not of the conservative elites, but rather we are the party of the people. And I hope and pray they do that. And that's why for, you know, a couple of years I've been saying all progressives and liberals out there really need to be joining the Democratic Party and take it over and bring it back. And this is the thing that the Republicans fear the most, by the way, and the conservatives fear the most. They love it that the Democratic Party has been so badly diluted. And if they do this, then I think the Democratic Party will have a tremendous future. If, on the other hand, those forces within the Democratic Party who are still sucking on the straw of the big corporations, and there's a lot of them. There's a lot of individual politicians, and there are a lot of, you know, interest groups within the Democratic Party, not the least of which is the DLC, continue to promote essentially a corporatist agenda. You know, well, let's get along and go along, and, you know, let's just, you know, pick a few issues here and there, but let's not really try and hammer these corporations that are trying to take over our democracy.
Yeah.
Then I think that the Democratic Party may go the way of the Whigs. I agree with the Pat Buchanans of the world who say if that's the case, you know, they say it for different reasons, but I say if that's the case, then the Democratic Party may have really shot itself in the foot.
Because basically, as a basic vision of the party, I just think that vilifying the Republican Party for corporate corruption, vilifying Republican policy, which gives enormous billions and billions of dollars in subsidies to extraction crony industries that don't advance us and keep the South and the Midwest kind of in a very, you know, in a low wage.
Yeah, and producing basically slavery for workers. I mean, you know, yes, absolutely. Only I wouldn't even use the word vilifying. You just tell the truth. You don't have to spin it. Just tell the truth. You're absolutely right, John. And that's my take on it. It's the Tom. Thanks for the call, John. I do appreciate it. 10 minutes before the hour, Tom Hartman program, the pill that will help you escape the matrix.
Bonjour. My name is Véronique Raskin. I founded the Organic Wine Company 25 years ago. If you love wine and have not tried our French wines, you are in for a treat. Nowadays, people everywhere are buying organic fruits and vegetables because they know they taste better. Organic grapes are so luscious. When turned into wine, you can really taste the difference with every sip. So our wines are delicious and eco-friendly. So I want to make it easy for you to try them out. Call me right away at 1-888-ECO-WINE and I will send you 3 of my favorite organically grown French wines at half off the regular price. That's just $25 plus shipping. Isn't that magnifique? I think so. If you don't share my enthusiasm, I'll gladly refund your money. So take me up on my offer and call me at 1-888-ECO-WINE. ECOWINE. Au revoir.
How can there be hope when millions starve in a world of plenty? How can there be justice when the rich parade their wealth before the poor? How can there be peace when each man is his neighbor's enemy? In a world of chaos, peace is possible, but only if we address the root causes of our global crisis, poverty, hunger, and despair. We must share the world's resources to create justice. Without justice, there can be no peace. Fortunately, we're not alone in our efforts. According to futurist Benjamin Krem, a group of enlightened teachers led by Maitreya, the world teacher, is here to inspire a new approach based on the principle of sharing. With their guidance, we can transform the world and create a peaceful future for all. For a free audio CD of an extraordinary lecture by Benjamin Krem on the emergence of the teachers, call toll-free 888-242-8272. Again, that's 888-242-8272. How can contemporary America possibly compare with 1933 Germany? Find out in Tom Hartman's brand new fully illustrated book, We the People, A Call to Take Back America. Through Tom's concise political analysis and Neil Cohn's vibrant illustrations, you'll observe an unsettling, if not shocking, perspective of America. You'll also hear what the founders of this country did to control corporate power. You'll be invited to consider how the American political system can be made more democratic, as well as comprehend the project for the new American century's vision for America. Here's what syndicated cartoonist Ted Rawl said after reading We the People.
An ambitious effort to explain everything that's wrong in America, how things got this way, and what should be done about it. We the People is the product of a brilliant and principled thinker.
We the People, A Call to Take Back America by Tom Hartman. Available in bookstores everywhere.
A university taps the deep waters of a nearby lake to keep its campus cool. I'm Richard Hoops for Earthwatch Radio. Cornell University is a major research institution that's located near Cayuga Lake, one of the Finger Lakes in upstate New York. Cornell uses a lot of energy for air conditioning during the summer, and a few engineers found a creative way to use Cayuga Lake to cool off the campus. Lanny Joyce is an engineer at Cornell's Utilities Department, and he helped develop the university's Lake Source Cooling Project. He says Cayuga Lake is so deep that only part of it warms up in the summer. Joyce says there's a layer of frigid water at the bottom of the lake all year long, and the university is using it to cool pipes that provide air conditioning to the campus.
We're saving 87% of the electricity of doing cooling the conventional way, which makes an annual electric use reduction in the neighborhood of $1.5 to $2 million a year. So it's a significant savings in electricity use and something that's a huge benefit to the global environment by not having to generate that electricity in some regional power plant.
The university performed environmental assessments before and after pipes were laid for the cooling system. Some people worried that the lake might warm up because the water that comes back from campus is warmer than when it was pumped out. Joyce says that's not an issue.
The amount of heat turns out in reality to be the equivalent of about 2 hours of additional sunlight over the course of a year.
Cornell's system went into operation 4 years ago. The city of Toronto recently built a modified version of the Cornell system, and it's now using water from the depths of Lake Ontario to cool 100 office buildings downtown. Earthwatch Radio is a service of the Sea Grant Program and the Gaylord Nelson Institute at the University of Wisconsin.
Exploring the truth of the day, here's Tom Hartman.
And welcome back. Tom Hartman here with you. 5 minutes before the hour, 1-866-889-8894. Telephone number, uncommon sense from the radical middle. You're in the real free speech zone. No barbed wire here. Although I guess we can, now that Bush has been elected finally, we can expect to see even more of that around any place that he may be speaking. 1-866-889-8894, telephone number. Jim in Brooksville, Florida on the line. Hey, Jim, welcome to the show.
Well, thank you. The point I want to make is, you know, as pointed out in the book, Bush's Brain, Roe's main goal is to have a one-party government.
Right. It's a Stalinist agenda, essentially.
Right.
Single-party rule.
I know you call it fascism. I call it corporate communism. The neo-communists.
Well, it's Stalinism. I mean, the communism in the communist countries never resembled anything Karl Marx wrote about. But we're splitting hairs anyway.
You're right. But my reason I use that term, by the way, is just to shock the hell out of the Republicans.
Yeah.
But the thing about it is... We know that the Supreme Court and Scalia, who wrote the major opinion, based his opinion that we don't have the right to vote on the fact that the Constitution, or have the right votes recount on the Constitution, where it says that really the right of the voting for the president falls to the Electoral College.
Right, and thus to the
states.
There's
80,000 votes that were not even counted. He said, well, that's just too bad.
Yeah.
Could they? We also know that Bush wants people in the Supreme Court using Scalia and Thomas as the role models.
Yep.
Could they not be actually moving toward the point where the Supreme Court would rule that we're going back to the system of the Electoral College, which is...
We already have that system, Jim.
I mean, right, but negating our right to vote...
Oh, you mean just taking it so the individual voters don't even vote for electors?
That's right.
That's not going to happen. That'll never happen. I mean, it's a nice paranoid conspiracy theory. And I don't mean that dismissively. I mean, it's the sort of thing that, I wouldn't put it past them, but I don't think it's going to happen. Kevin in Tampa on the line. Hey, Kevin, we just got a few seconds left. What's up?
Tom, I wanted to talk with you about what you've been talking about. And what Howard Dean is doing, because I'm in Dean's group.
Yeah, well, Kevin, why don't you give us a call back in the next hour, a little bit later on in the day, and we can get into that, because we got to wrap this hour up here, and what Dean is doing and what his group is doing. I would love to hear from you.
I was in a conference call with Howard Dean last week.
Great. Well, I'd love to hear the details of that, and I'd love to hear it on the air, but we're out of time here right now. Thanks a lot for calling, though. 1-866-889-8894, our telephone number. If you're going to be listening to the future hours of the program... Warren's vote tally walled off. Warren, Ohio. We'll tell you about that a little bit. It's the Tom Hartman Program.
You've been listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Check our website at www.tomhartman.com for archives of this program and more information.
If it weren't for In These Times, I'd be a man without a country, says author Kurt Vonnegut. For more than 27 years, the progressive news magazine In These Times has provided groundbreaking coverage of movements for social, environmental, and economic justice. It is the publication the scholar and activist Cornel West calls the most creative and challenging news magazine of the American left. In These Times features award-winning reporting and analysis of national and international news. Turn to In These Times for stories on civil liberties, the environment, labor, feminism, and much more. Writer Barbara Ehrenreich put it this way: to people who say they are sick of the corporate-dominated and celebrity-fixated media, I say, stop whining and subscribe to In These Times. Find In These Times on your newsstand or visit us online at www.inthesetimes.com or call 1-800-827-0270. That's 1-800-827-0270.
Pop and not so pop culture, democracy and the news of the day. This is the Tom Hartman Program.
You're listening to WIN, the Workers' Independent News Service. I'm Jesse Russell.
And I'm Doug Cunningham.
By the end of this year, the country's second-largest telephone company plans to eliminate 10,000 U.S. jobs, reducing its workforce by more than 6%. The cuts at SBC come on top of 7,000 jobs already lost this year through what the company calls normal attrition. The company is adjusting to a changing market where more and more people are replacing their landlines with cell phones and internet calling. To date, SBC has sent more than 4,500 jobs overseas.
George Bush will remain in the White House, and with Republican control of both the House and the Senate and no concerns regarding re-election, he has free rein to implement campaign promises of a so-called ownership society. That buzzword stands in for a host of policies Republicans are itching to thrust upon America.
I'd say that the hallmark of the ownership society is privatizing Social Security.
Gretchen Young is the Vice President of Government Affairs for Aon Consulting.
The two other major elements in the benefits arena are health savings accounts, where individuals take more responsibility, and then there's also an element in the retirement part of the agenda, which would emphasize something called a lifetime savings account.
Jack Minnis is an economist.
Everything that Bush has done in the 3.5 years he's been in office is to curtail or suppress consumer income. And how one gets from lack of income to ownership is a mystery unless he is prepared to legalize bank robbery.
According to the Tax Foundation analysis of IRS statistics, 58 million income-earning households pay no income taxes, so a health care tax break doesn't help low-income workers.
Workers are returning to the casinos in Atlantic City after more than a month of inability to reach a compromise. Employees from Harrah's Entertainment accepted a contract and ended their strike when the company began hiring replacement workers. Represented by the Hotel and Restaurant Employees Union, the workers were demanding a contract that would expire at the same time as those in Las Vegas. The casino chain refused to back down, as it would have given the union massive bargaining power by shutting down casinos in two major markets. The union says that Harrah's blinked first, as the company gave concessions on the most important issues, such as pay and health care.
Here's today's Dow Bob report. There were 708 mass layoff actions in September of this year. Total number of workers laid off in September from those actions, nearly 69,000. From January through September of 2004, there were 11,725 mass layoff actions, hitting 1,187,546 workers. Manufacturing had 27% of all those mass layoff actions and 37% of the workers laid off. The numbers come from the Bureau of Labor Statistics.
You've been listening to WIN, the Workers' Independent News Service. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
What does corporate power have to do with disarmament? How does working for racial justice affect trade agreements? And what do they all have to do with the Cuban blockade? Having trouble making a connection? It's our specialty. The Women's International League for Peace and Freedom, for 88 years, connecting the issues for democracy and social justice. Why don't you connect with us? WILPF.org or call 215-563-7110.
Even though Washington is spending billions of our tax dollars to defend the homeland from a biological attack by foreign terrorists, our leaders were asleep at the switch on the need to defend us from a biological assault that everyone knew was coming. The flu. This is a deadly matter, for flu kills about 36,000 of us every year. Yet the White House and Congress were totally unprepared when a British factory that supplied half of our flu vaccinations was shut down because of contamination. This gross failure of leadership means that millions of Americans will not get the shots they need this winter, and many will die as a result. This crisis is the result of rank incompetence and ideological stupidity by our political leaders. Of course, these so-called leaders are now trying to dodge their responsibility, claiming they couldn't have known about the contamination at the plant. Hogwash. The problems there were widely publicized months ago. Also, this is the second year in a row that our vaccine supply was botched. It's been a crisis waiting to happen, and now it has. But the real cause of the failure to protect our public health is Washington's insanely irrational pursuit of privatization and laissez-faire theory. Washington ideologues tied our nation's health to the profit whims of only two of the corporations that make flu shots, neither of which are even in the U.S. Other nations are not facing a flu shot crisis because they wisely get their medicines from many sources. Well, sniffed the politicos, U.S. drug makers don't find flu shots a profitable enough business, so what could we do? Hello, gooberheads. It's time to admit that the profit motive does not always serve the public interest, especially on health care issues. When corporations fail to meet the need, government must. This is Jim Hightower saying, people should not be dying because politicians are more interested in protecting their ideological purity than in protecting public health.
The following is brought to you by Pfizer and Viagra Sildenafil Citrate.
So this morning, I'm looking into my shaving mirror, my wife's still in bed, and this guy is staring back at me with a mischievous glint in his eye. He looks familiar. So I say, Wild Thing? Is that you? You're back.
Not all medications are for everyone, so consult with your doctor first. Then ask if Viagra is right for you. To learn more, visit Viagra.com.
It's a wild day here at the stock market. Let's talk to some traders. How are you doing?
I'm taking a shelling, but I'm still gelling.
Okay, and how about you?
I'm gelling and selling. Gelling and selling.
My trades are smelling.
But who cares?
We're gelling.
Are you gelling yet? Dr. Scholl's massaging gel insoles are made from the softest gel ever created. If you and your feet don't feel outrageously comfortable, you get your money back, guaranteed. Are you gelling? Dr. Scholl's. Know who's really gelling? The King of Queens, Monday through Friday. Check your local listing.
Calling for a rapid and radical return to the old values that made America great, the values of democracy on which this country was founded, here's Tom Hartman.
Well, Warren County, Ohio. Fascinating story here. Warren County, Ohio, one of the counties that ran late on Tuesday night. In fact, according to the Cincinnati Inquirer, an article by Erica Solvig from the Inquirer's staff, the Warren results delayed for hours because of long lines that extended voting past the scheduled close of polls were part of the last tallies that helped clinch President Bush's re-election. Well, it turns out that Warren County was not observed by anybody. So there's some great mystery here. It turns out Warren County Emergency Services Director Frank Young said he recommended increasing security based on information received from the U.S. Department of Homeland Security. And they basically locked this thing down. They citing concerns about potential terrorism, Warren County officials locked down a county administration building on election night and blocked anyone from observing the vote count as the nation awaited Ohio's returns. Another strange one. They keep coming. Welcome back, my friends. Tom Hartman here with you, broadcasting live coast to coast on radio stations in California to North Carolina, beaming down from outer space on the Sirius satellite, streaming around the planet on radiopower.org, archives at whiterosesociety.org. You can get into our chat room by going to tomhartman.com or into our message board area. Or our program archives. Last week I had brought up the issue of partial birth abortion, suggesting that this, like gay marriage, was really a wedge issue, essentially a non-issue. And some guy called up and went into this long rant with me about, you know, he'd apparently seen some movie about the horrors of this. And I asked him if his wife was confronted with the choice of aborting a fetus late term or dying, which would he choose if the choice was his? And he said he'd rather have the baby go long term and his wife die. And I, you know, a lot of our callers thought that was pretty strange. And then somebody sent me an email with a copy of the new law, because I had said that I thought that Kerry voted against the so-called partial birth abortion ban because it didn't provide for the life of the, or health of the mother. And my understanding had been that ever since Roe v. Wade, if a fetus was viable, that you couldn't abort it. And but I, you know, I am not an authority on this thing. And somebody sent me a copy of the law that said that no, there is that exemption. And so I decided we need to get an expert on here just to clean this stuff up. Elizabeth Cavendish is with us. She's the interim president of Elizabeth. Is it pronounced Narrow or Gnarl or N-A-R-A?
NARAL Pro-Choice America.
Thank you, NARAL Pro-Choice America, the national. Well, what's the acronym stand for? I don't have that.
Well, it really doesn't stand for anything anymore. Yeah. It used to stand for something, and now we're just NARAL Pro-Choice America.
Okay, fine, great. And Elizabeth, welcome to the program, first of all, and thanks for coming on with us.
Thanks for having me on, Tom.
I'm very glad that you were available. Inform me, bring me up to date on all this stuff. What was not late term abortion essentially not allowed anyway, basically since Roe v. Wade? And how did this whole so-called partial birth abortion thing come about? Is there really any doctor in America that if a woman at 8 months walked in and said, you know, I want to get rid of this thing, would say, oh, sure, no problem? Do people actually, I mean, what's going on with this? Set us straight.
Okay. You asked a few questions there. I'll take on the first one about late term and Roe. People use late term in a variety of ways, but in 1973, the Supreme Court upheld as a constitutional matter a woman's right to choose in Roe v. Wade. But it put limits on that constitutional protection. And it said that states may, after the third trimester, which roughly corresponded at that time with viability, could ban abortion, except they had to protect a woman's life and health.
In other words, after the 6th month, or after the beginning or the end of the 6th month, trimester.
At the Roe v. Wade time, it was third trimester, so months 7, 8, and 9, and now that's been reinterpreted to be after viability,
right.
And so after about 23, 24 weeks, and it all depends on the woman's situation, a state can ban abortion so long as it protects a woman's life or health. And indeed, 40 states already do ban late-term abortion, and NARAL Pro-Choice America doesn't have any complaint with that so long, again, as the woman's life or health is protected. So it's kind of misleading to think that this federal abortion ban is addressing late-term abortion because it's already addressed.
It's already the law in 40 states, and beyond that.
And so you asked how it came about.
Well, before we get to that,
okay.
Elizabeth, just as a practical matter, is there any demand for late-term abortions? I mean, is this something that you know? This weekend, I'm on the board of a nonprofit group, and if one of the other board members is married to a physician, and who said that he has never in the 32 years he's been practicing medicine ever met a doctor who would perform a late-term abortion if he really believed that the baby was totally viable, and can't imagine anybody doing it. Is this even an issue?
I think you're right about that. Of course, the majority, 88% of abortions are done in the first trimester, the first 12 weeks. So typically, a woman finds out she's pregnant and can't carry the pregnancy to term, and she takes care of it early on. 99.93% of abortions, I believe, are done before 24 weeks. So you're only talking about the teeniest, tiniest fraction of people who would ever seek and need a very late-term abortion. And that's typically in a situation where medical results show some grievous anomaly later on, or a woman's health.
Like the baby's going to be born without a brain, or the woman is...
Right, they're terribly tragic situations. And
right.
So it's very unusual for a woman to need an abortion real late on anyway. And so that leads us to the point that this is a very misleadingly named and misleadingly depicted bill. We call it the federal abortion ban because it's not just it's not about one procedure. This partial birth statement makes it sound like a baby is being born, and women aren't having babies and changing their mind mid-term, mid-course of labor, these are situations that are banned much earlier in pregnancy than the proponents of the bill depict.
Right. So,
in fact, it bans abortions. It would cover abortions as early as 12 to 15 weeks.
Right. So, oh, interesting.
Which is not a common situation, but it's certainly sometimes needed. You know, people get their medical results from an amnio or an ultrasound in that time period.
And 12 to 15 weeks, you still don't have a fetus that's viable. It couldn't survive outside the womb.
That's right. That's right. And so this is Congress passing medical legislation that goes right to the heart of medical practice and women's privacy. Our opponents sort of outmaneuver us on the message side, and they give it this misleading name that basically compels people to support the idea of it. But really, it's not about what they say. It's about at all.
Now, how and why would anybody want to take an issue that is so? It's got to be excruciating. I mean, I've known people. I've had friends who've had abortions, and I don't know anybody who took it lightly, frankly. I mean, there's probably some people out there who do, but the few people that I know, mostly back from, you know, when I was much younger, it was a very, very, very difficult decision. Why would anybody take such an intimate, such a personal, such a difficult issue and pander it? Why would they turn this into something to be used for political gain? What's the agenda here? How did this come about?
That our opponent's hidden agenda, or their true intent, is to make all abortion illegal and to take away a woman's right to choose.
I think they
don't have the support for that. The American public strongly supports a woman's right to choose, and so, right, you know, our side won in the 1980s when they were pushing human life amendments to the Constitution and so forth. So what they decided they needed to do was focus on smaller battles that seemed winnable, but that would open up a legal course that would set in motion a path toward the overturn of Roe.
Yeah. Now,
without public support, but for their ultimate goal, but where they would have some public support for their interim goals.
Okay.
So they exploit the public's distaste for later-term abortion, and they call it late-term or partial birth, even though it's misleadingly named, and they make it sound that their law is about a fringe issue when it really goes to the heart of protecting women's health, ensuring medical privacy, and giving women a chance to decide whether or not to carry a pregnancy to term, which sometimes takes more than, you know, 12 or 15 weeks.
Yeah. Now, isn't there even a bigger issue than this? I mean, there was this pharmacist recently who refused to give birth control pills to a young woman because he felt that he didn't want to burn in hell. I mean,
Absolutely.
Isn't there really the big issue is that this is a remnant of the whole Catholic thing of they're just anti all forms of birth control, period.
I think they are against. You know, our opponents fall along a spectrum, as do pro-choice Americans, and some may just oppose abortion in some circumstances, but it's clear that the animating spirit and the real organization and the money behind it are people who oppose a woman's right to choose altogether, and then there's some subset of that that would go even farther and seek to ban contraceptives or go back to a time when only married people could obtain contraceptives. And they want to restrict information about contraception. And that subset, nonetheless, has some important sway.
Yeah. Well, now, I think it was 1964, there was the Supreme Court case about whether even a married couple could have contraceptives. That was the one in which one of the justices said he could find no right of privacy in the Constitution that Clarence Thomas quoted in the Texas Southern case.
So, you know, in the 60s, Griswold against Connecticut.
Griswold, Connecticut, right.
That married women, married couples, could have contraception. And then later that was extended so that unmarried people had a constitutional right to contraception. But clearly this group of pharmacists for life is trying to organize and make sure that they don't have to dispense birth control pills or emergency contraception, which is just basically higher dose birth control pills taken a couple of days after unprotected sex. They oppose contraception. And we know that on the Hill, Capitol Hill, They've succeeded in passing a huge amount of funding for abstinence-only education programs. And those abstinence-only programs basically gag the program providers, whether they're teachers or other educators, from even discussing contraception.
Elizabeth Cavendish, president or interim president of NARAL. Say it, please.
I'm not NARAL Pro-Choice America.
NARAL Pro-Choice America. Elizabeth, we've only got about 15 seconds here. How can people contact you if they want to support the work you're doing?
WorldWideWebProChoiceAmerica.org.
www.prochoiceamerica.org.
We'd love them to join our Choice Action Network so they can take action to protect the right to choose.
Great. Elizabeth, thank you very much for being with us. I appreciate it. Thanks.
Thank
and thanks
you.
For educating me on this issue. I appreciate
thanks
that.
Thanks so much.
Okay, have a good
Bye
one.
Now.
Bye now. It's the Tom Hartman Radio Program, 20 minutes past the hour.
I guess I better let the dog in.
Like the small dog that rules the house, Small Dog Electronics is the small computer company that really rules when it comes to customer service. Small Dog Electronics is your authorized Apple reseller in Wakefield, Vermont. Sure, you can buy your computer out of a catalog, but how do you know you're really getting what you want or what you need? At Small Dog, they don't work on commission. Their only motivation is making sure you're a happy customer. Put your business on the leading edge with the world's fastest computer, the new Macintosh G5. You'll finish the job ahead of the pack, and automatic security updates block out viruses. That's speed and dependability that will keep you focused on your customers instead of sitting on hold with tech support.
I guess you want to get on the couch, huh?
Like the small dog who everybody makes room for, Small Dog Electronics is big on customer service. Small Dog Electronics. Check them out on the web at smalldog.com or at their showroom on Route 100 in Waitsfield.
No way. You're not getting on the bed.
Bonjour, my name is Michel, and I founded the Organic Wine Company with my sister 25 years ago. If you love wine and have not tried our French wines yet, you are in for a treat. Nowadays, people everywhere are buying organic fruits and vegetables because they know they taste better. Organic grapes are so luscious that when turned into wine, you can really taste the difference. Our wines are delicious and eco-friendly. So I want to make it very easy for you to try them out. Call me right away at 1-888-ECO-WINE and I will send you three of my favorite organic French wines at half their regular price. That's just $25 plus shipping. C'est magnifique! And if you don't agree, I will gladly refund your money. So take me up on my offer and call me right away at 1-888-ECO-WINE, which is ECOWINE. Au revoir!
Can you imagine a world in which all kids live healthy, safe, productive, and prosperous lives? Well, that world is within our grasp, and there's a way to reach it. It's called Ecolonomics. And to learn more, just pull up DennisWeaverNow.com and learn how to get a free report of our Ecolonomics educational program and how together we can build a world of prosperity without pollution. DennisWeaverNow.com. DennisWeaverNow.com. DennisWeaverNow.com.
Here's today's Dow Bob Report. The Bush administration can't seem to get it right when it comes to creating jobs. In the U.S., there's a net loss of jobs. In Iraq, the Bush administration blames a clerical error for overstating the number of Iraqi jobs in projects funded by the U.S. Agency for International Development. The agency first said more than 88,000 were working in its projects as of September 15th, but that has changed to just under 46,000 blamed on a clerical error.
Visit iowapeace.com for books on justice and peace. The Last Liberal Outlaw is Mike Palasek's new novel. Chuck Gregory with BlueEar.com had this to say. Palasek is at his best when writing about small-town America. It's a place he clearly loves, even as he pokes fun at its quirks and reveals the sickness that lies just below the surface. It's a place he knows, and he shares his knowledge in delightfully original ways, even as he cries out for change. We haven't had a writer like Palasek since Kurt Vonnegut was at his peak. Mike is an Iowa author, former federal prisoner for peace, small-town newspaper reporter, seminarian, and nominee for the U.S. House of Representatives in the Iowa Democratic Party 2000 election. For more information and more about Mike's other novels, visit iowapeace.com. The revolution won't be televised, but you can read about it. The Last Liberal Outlaw, A New American Revolution, is happening in the heartland.
Thank you.
democracy to the United States of America, here's Tom Hartman.
And welcome back. 24 minutes past the hour. Well, there's no safety in a job well done. Those who voted for Bush may be in for a big surprise, writes Jonathan Shade in the Los Angeles Times this weekend. Dear rural, exurban, Christian, conservative voters, he writes, congratulations on your election victory. By going to the polls in unprecedented numbers Tuesday, you overwhelmed an enormous Democratic turnout and returned President Bush to office, along with a number of very conservative senators. Now Bush is preparing to repay your efforts by moving immediately on your highest priorities, a flat tax and privatizing Social Security. Oh, wait, you didn't particularly hanker for those things? Yeah, this is some folks are in for a big surprise. A big surprise. They're going to get into bankruptcy reform to make it easier for corporations to use bankruptcy to dump employees, pensioners, employee health care programs, things like this, as a technique that is aggressively being used right now. And yet at the same time to make it harder for an individual who is caught in a debt trap, credit card debt trap, to get out from underneath it. So you can see a tightening of the bankruptcy laws. They're already talking about this now. Again, in a more corporate-friendly way. Shifting Social Security so that rather than we the people administering the Social Security Trust Fund, Citibank, with its Saudi owners, will be administering, or partial owners, will be administering parts of the Social Security Trust Fund. And, of course, other banking institutions that contribute mightily to the Republican Party and the Democratic Party. We're going to see tax simplification. What's this going to mean? It's going to mean people in the lower brackets are going to pay more and people in the top brackets are going to pay less. Bush says he wants it to be net revenue neutral. In other words, he wants to maintain the enormous deficits that we have. He wants to continue, you know, having our grandchildren pay for the credit card lifestyle that he wants to have right now for his wars and whatnot. But in addition, it means things like, well, let's get rid of some of these loopholes. Now, we know that Bush really actually loves loopholes. I mean, they just passed a $350 billion tax reform bill that was nothing but corporate loopholes. This was just passed, you know, a month and a half ago. And literally, it was nothing but a whole series of corporate loopholes. A tax cut for this corporation, a tax cut for that corporation, a tax cut for this. It was a grab bag of tax. Well, so Bush says he's going to simplify the tax cut. He's not going to do anything about that stuff. So if he's going to come after you and me to simplify the tax code, how's he going to do it? Well, maybe they'll get rid of the home mortgage deduction. That would be an interesting one. It helped build the middle class. Didn't used to be there. It was put into place by Democrats, by Roosevelt, I believe. Let's get rid of the home interest tax deduction. Yeah, that's a possibility. Let's say that progressive taxes are wrong and just go with the flat tax. Now, the whole idea of progressive taxes goes back to literally to the writings of Thomas Jefferson when he was president, and he translated Desuit de Tracy's book on economics from the French to the English and had this eureka, and he said, you know, people shouldn't have to pay taxes at all until their basic necessities are covered by their income. Once all their basic necessities are covered and they have a decent life, then you can start taxing them on what is beyond that. That just seems reasonable and fair. That's the idea of progressive taxation. And those who are earning massive incomes are making massively larger use of the infrastructure of the United States, of the economic infrastructure, the legal infrastructure. They're gaining, you know, greater blessings from the opportunities provided by this country. They can pay a proportionally larger share. But no, the flat tax folks say, you know, even if you make $5,000 a year and you're struggling, you should pay the same tax that a billionaire pays. And they say this with a straight face. I saw Grover Norquist on TV. They say, no, you shouldn't penalize somebody for working Saturday. Right. 29 minutes past the hour.
Tonight on American Dreams, a family strength is tested.
I don't think your brother's coming home.
And an explosive all-new Law & Order Criminal Intent. A family's dead. Car accident or murder. This is one mother of a story. Then an NBC event. Crossing Jordan teams up with the cast of Las Vegas. Two shows, one murder.
What happens in Vegas?
Apparently dies in Boston.
American Dreams, Law & Order Criminal Intent, and Crossing Jordan. NBC tonight.
Pop and not-so-pop culture, democracy, and the news of the day. This is the Tom Hartman Program.
You're listening to WIN, the Workers' Independent News Service. I'm Jesse Russell.
And I'm Doug Cunningham.
By the end of this year, the country's second-largest telephone company plans to eliminate 10,000 U.S. jobs, reducing its workforce by more than 6%. The cuts at SBC come on top of 7,000 jobs already lost this year through what the company calls normal attrition. The company is adjusting to a changing market where more and more people are replacing their landlines with cell phones and internet calling. To date, SBC has sent more than 4,500 jobs overseas.
George Bush will remain in the White House, and with Republican control of both the House and the Senate and no concerns regarding re-election, he has free rein to implement campaign promises of a so-called ownership society. That buzzword stands in for a host of policies Republicans are itching to thrust upon America.
I'd say that the hallmark of the ownership society is privatizing Social Security.
Gretchen Young is the Vice President of Government Affairs for Aon Consulting.
The two other major elements in the benefits arena are health savings accounts, where individuals take more responsibility, and then there's also an element in the retirement part of the agenda, which would emphasize something called a lifetime savings account.
Jack Minnis is an economist.
Everything that Bush has done in the 3.5 years he's been in office is to curtail or suppress consumer income. And how one gets from lack of income to ownership is a mystery unless he is prepared to legalize bank robbery.
According to the Tax Foundation analysis of IRS statistics, 58 million income-earning households pay no income taxes, so a health care tax break doesn't help low-income workers.
Workers are returning to the casinos in Atlantic City after more than a month of inability to reach a compromise. Employees from Harrah's Entertainment accepted a contract and ended their strike when the company began hiring replacement workers. Represented by the Hotel and Restaurant Employees Union, the workers were demanding a contract that would expire at the same time as those in Las Vegas. The casino chain refused to back down, as it would have given the union massive bargaining power by shutting down casinos in two major markets. The union says that Harrah's blinked first, as the company gave concessions on the most important issues, such as pay and health care.
Here's today's Dow Bob report. There were 708 mass layoff actions in September of this year. Total number of workers laid off in September from those actions, nearly 69,000. From January through September of 2004, there were 11,725 mass layoff actions, hitting 1,187,546 workers. Manufacturing had 27% of all those mass layoff actions and 37% of the workers laid off. The numbers come from the Bureau of Labor Statistics.
You've been listening to WIN, the Workers' Independent News Service. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
Today you're working for the man.
Welcome back. 27 minutes before the hour. Tom Hartman here with you. I'm gonna do something in this segment of the show that I rarely do, and that is share with you the words of somebody else at some length. In 1969, the University of Chicago Press published a book written by a guy named Milton Meyer. I believe the first edition of it was actually published back in the 50s. But the copy I have is a 1969 trade paperback. And his name, Milton Meyer, M-A-Y-E-L, maybe it's Mayer. They thought they were free, the Germans, 1933 through 1945. Milton Meyer was a Jew who lived in Germany from 33 to 45. And he writes about his experience. And I just want to share with you a few of his comments, because they are germane, I believe, to this day. And it will or won't become self-evident, I guess, as we go along. Let me just, without further ado, what no one seemed to notice. Now, he's quoting a colleague of his. He said, what no one seemed to notice was the ever-widening gap after 1933 between the government and the people. Just think how very wide this gap was to begin with here in Germany, and it became always wider. You know, it doesn't make people close to their government to be told that this is a people's government, a true democracy, to be enrolled in civilian defense, or even to vote. All this has really little, very little to do with knowing one is governing. What happened here, he says, was the gradual habituation of the people, little by little, to being governed by surprise, to receiving decisions deliberated in secret, to believing that the situation was so complicated that the government had to act on information which the people could not understand, or so dangerous that even if the people could understand it, it could not be released because of national security. This separation of government from the people, this widening of the gap, writes Milton Meyer in They Thought They Were Free, took place so gradually and so insensibly, each step disguised, perhaps not even intentionally, as a temporary emergency measure or associated with true patriotic allegiance or with real social purposes. Now, keep in mind, again, I'm reading this. This Milton Meyer wrote this in the 30s in Germany. And all the crises and reforms, real reforms too, so occupied the people that they did not see the slow motion underneath of the whole process of government growing remoter and remoter. He says, one had no time to think. There was so much going on. The dictatorship and the whole process of its coming into being was above all diverting. It provided an excuse not to think for people who did not want to think anyway. Most of us didn't want to think about fundamental things. Never had. There was no need to. Nazism gave us some dreadful fundamental things to think about. We were decent people and kept us busy with continuous changes and crises, and so fascinated, yes, fascinated by the machinations of the national enemies within and without, that we had no time to think about these dreadful things that were growing little by little all around us. Unconsciously, I suppose, we were grateful. Who wants to think? To live in this process is absolutely not to be able to notice it. Please try to believe me. Unless one has a much greater degree of political awareness, acuity than most of us had ever had occasion to develop. Each step was so small, so inconsequential, so well explained or on occasion regretted, that unless one were detached from the whole process from the beginning, unless one understood that the whole thing was what the whole thing was in principle, what all these little measures that no patriotic German could resent must someday lead to, one no more saw it developing from day to day than a farmer in his field sees the corn growing, yet one day it is over his head. Martin Mayer goes on to say, Pastor Niemöller spoke for the thousands and thousands of men like me when he spoke too modestly of himself to say that when the Nazis attacked the communists, he was a little uneasy, but after all, he was not a communist, and so he did nothing. And then they attacked the socialists, and he was a little uneasier, but still, he wasn't a socialist, and he did nothing. And then the schools, the press, the Jews, and so on, and he was always a little uneasier, but still, he did nothing. And then they attacked the church, and he was a churchman, and he did something, but then it was too late. You see, my colleague went on, Martin Meyer writes in his book, The Germans, 1933 to 45. Again, this is a Jewish guy who survived, who lived through Germany. You see, one doesn't see exactly where or how to move. Believe me, this is true. each act, each occasion is worse than the last, but only a little worse. You wait for the next. And the next. You wait for the one great shocking occasion, thinking that others, when such a shock comes, will join you in resisting somehow. You don't want to act or even to talk alone. You don't want to go out of your way to make trouble. Why not? Well, you're not in the habit of doing it. And it's not just fear. Fear of standing alone that restrains you. It's also genuine uncertainty. Uncertainty is a very important factor, and instead of decreasing as time goes on, it grows. Outside in the streets and in the general community, it appears everyone's happy. One hears no protests. Certainly one sees none. You know, in France and Italy, there were slogans against the government. But what do you say? They say, you know, it's not so bad. Or you're seeing things. Or you're an alarmist. And Milton Meyer writes of his years, 1933 to 1945 in Germany as a Jew. He writes, and you are an alarmist. You are saying that this must lead to that, but you can't prove it. These are the beginnings, yes, but how do you know for sure when you don't know the end? And how do you know or even surmise the end? On the one hand, your enemies, the law, the regime, the party, they intimidate you. On the other hand, your colleagues poo-poo you as a pessimist or even a neurotic. You're left with your close friends who, naturally, are people who've always thought the same as you have. But your friends are fewer now. Some have drifted off somewhere or submerged themselves in their work. You no longer see as many as you did at meetings or gatherings. Informal groups become smaller. Attendance drops off in little organizations, and the organizations themselves wither. Now, in small gatherings of your oldest friends, you feel that you're talking to yourselves, that you're isolated from the reality of things. This weakens your confidence still further and serves as a further deterrent to what? It's clearer all the time that if you're going to do anything, you must make an occasion to do it, and then you're obviously a troublemaker. So you wait. And you wait. But the one great shocking occasion, where tens or hundreds of thousands will join with you, never comes. That's the difficulty. If the last and worst act of the whole regime had come immediately after the first and the smallest, thousands, yes, millions, would have been sufficiently shocked. If, let us say, the gassing of the Jews in 43 had come immediately after the German-only firm stickers on the windows of non-Jewish shops in 33. But, of course, this isn't the way it happens. In between come all the hundreds of little steps, some of them imperceptible. Each of them preparing you not to be shocked by the next. Step C is not so much worse than step B, and if you did not take a stand at step B, why should you take a stand at step C? And so on to step D. Until one day, too late. Your principles, if you were ever sensible of them, all rush in upon you. The burden of self-deception has grown too heavy, and some minor incident. In my case, my little boy, hardly more than a baby, saying, Jew, swine, collapses it all at once. And you see that everything has changed and changed completely under your nose. The world you live in, your nation, your people, is not the world you were in at all. The forms are all there, all untouched, all reassuring. The houses, the shops, the jobs, the mealtimes, the visits, the concerts, the cinema, the holidays. But the spirit, which you never noticed because you made the lifelong mistake of identifying it with the forms, is changed. Now you live in a world of hate and fear. And the people who hate and fear do not even know it themselves. When everyone is transformed, no one is transformed. Now you live in a system which rules without responsibility even to God. Suddenly it all comes down. Again, this is Martin Mayer in his book, The Germans, 1933 to 1945, a German Jew who lived through the Holocaust. Suddenly it all comes down, all at once. You see what you are, what you've done, or more accurately, what you haven't done. For that was all that was required of most of us, that we did nothing. You remember those early meetings of your department in the university when if one had stood, others would have stood perhaps, but no one stood. A small matter, a matter of hiring this man or that. And you hired this one rather than that. Because he was or wasn't Jewish. You remember everything now and your heart breaks. Too late. You are compromised beyond repair. What then? Must you shoot yourself? A few did. Or adjust your principles? Many tried, and some, I suppose, succeeded. Not I, however. Or learn to relive the rest of your life with your shame? This last is the nearest there is, under the circumstances, to heroism. Shame. Many Germans became this poor kind of hero. Many more, I think, than the world cares to know. I can tell you of a man in Leipzig, a judge. He was not a Nazi, except nominally, but he certainly wasn't anti-Nazi. He was just a judge. In 1942 or 43, early 43, I think it was, a Jew was tried before him in a case involving, not only incidentally, relations with an Aryan woman. This was race injury, something the party was especially anxious to punish. In the case at bar, however, the judge had the power to convict the man of a non-racial offense and send him to an ordinary prison for a very long term, thus saving him from party processing, which would have meant concentration camp or more probably deportation and death. But the man was innocent of the non-racial charge, in the judge's opinion, and so as an honorable judge, he acquitted him. Of course, the party seized the Jew as soon as he left the courtroom. And the judge, he could not get the case off his conscience. A case, mind you, in which he had acquitted an innocent man. He thought he should have convicted him and saved him from the party, but how could he convict an innocent man? The thing preyed on him more and more, and he had to talk about it, first to his family, then to his friends, and then to his acquaintances. That's how I heard about it. After the 44 putsch, they arrested him. After that, I don't know. Once the war began, resistance, protest, criticism, complaint, all carried with them a multiplied likelihood of the greatest punishment. Mere lack of enthusiasm or failure to show it in public was defeatism. Goebbels was very clever here, too. So, it continues. I wanted to share that little bit with you. You can take it however you wish. The book, it's no longer in print. You can find used copies of it all over. They Thought They Were Free, The Germans, 1933 to 1945. Written back in the 40s, I believe, by Martin Mayer, M-A-Y-E-R. The copy I have published by the University of Chicago Press, 1969. And hopefully my reading it is within the bounds of fair use. Let's 1-866-889-8894. I notice all our lights have been lit up here. And Ellen Ratner is on. Let's see. Ellen dropped line 3. Who's on line 6 here, Ram? Is that? I'm gonna go on and find out. Nope, that's not. Yeah, I can't see. Okay. 1-866-889-8894, a telephone number. John from Shreveport, Louisiana. Got 3 questions. Hey, John, what's up?
Hey, I like your little recitation from Mayer there about the need to fight gun control. I really like that.
Well, it's the need to form, you know, Larry, I agree with you. It's the need to confront anything that you perceive to be tyranny.
Absolutely. I like that piece of philosophy even better. I'm sure you have my 3 questions in front of you from your screener.
I don't, actually.
You don't? Oh, okay, let me ask you.
All I know is your name and the city that you call from.
Mighty fine. Okay, let me give you the 3 questions. 1, with a 47% vote in 1996, did Bill Clinton have a popular mandate from the people?
Where are you going with this, Larry?
Oh, you can see where my name's John. I'm going with this. Let's answer. Okay, how about factual? Did Bill Clinton have a mandate with 47% of the vote?
John, I'm not going to get into some kind of partisan thing here with you. I'm not here to defend Bill Clinton. I mean, you know, Bill Clinton's not the president now.
Can you answer the question or just typically?
I don't have any idea.
Dismiss it.
Yeah, I think a mandate is something like, 70%. Reagan got every state except Wisconsin. That was probably pretty close to a mandate.
Okay, now I can accept that. Okay, 75% is a mandate then.
It's hard to say.
In my state, in an election, majority is 50% plus one vote. That's considered majority.
Yeah, yeah. John, it's a fascinating discussion. If you want to, get into splitting hairs and I don't even know where you're going with this. So we're gonna end it. 10 minutes before the hour. It's a Tom Hartman radio program. Talk radio for the rest of us. You want a mandate? Are George Bush's policies getting you down? Have you had enough of Bush's messianic militarism? Does John Ashcroft's assault on the Bill of Rights scare you? Do you believe that Dick Cheney had his conscience surgically removed 3 decades ago? Are you angry at the Iraq fiasco that was the brainchild of Deputy Secretary of Defense Paul out of his Wolfowitz? Well, then subscribe to the Progressive magazine. You'll get the insights of Barbara Ehrenreich, the inspiration of Howard Zinn, and the mirth of Molly Ivins, Will Durst, and Kate Clinton. They'll help you survive this dark age. And check this out. You can subscribe today for only $12 for 12 monthly issues. Simply get on the web and go to www.progressive.org or call 1-800-827-0555 and mention offer radio. That's 1-800-827-0555 and mention the radio offer from the Tom Hartman program. That's the Progressive. It's your antidote to reactionary policies.
The last hours of ancient sunlight, the fate of the world, and what we can do before it's too late is Tom Hartman's stunning wake-up call to humanity. Conversations with God author Neil Donald Walsh says this about the book.
Quote it everywhere. Buy 10 books and give them away. Don't let this action go unheard. You may feel like a voice in the wilderness, but it is your voice we're waiting to hear. Yours is the crucial vote. You are the determining factor. We reach critical mass when we reach you, and you choose to reach others with the simple message of this book. Let us act at last in the best interest of all. Then the sun will shine another day, and another still, and life will not merely go on, but achieve its highest expression, its grandest glory, its greatest joy. Can we give this gift to our children? Please say yes.
The Last Hours of Ancient Sunlight, The Fate of the World and What We Can Do Before It's Too Late by Tom Hartman. Available in bookstores everywhere.
If it weren't for In These Times, I'd be a man without a country, says author Kurt Vonnegut. For more than 27 years, the progressive news magazine In These Times has provided groundbreaking coverage of movements for social, environmental, and economic justice. It is the publication the scholar and activist Cornel West calls the most creative and challenging news magazine of the American left. In These Times features award-winning reporting and analysis of national and international news. Turn to In These Times for stories on civil liberties, the environment, labor, feminism, and much more. Writer Barbara Ehrenreich put it this way, to people who say they are sick of the corporate-dominated and celebrity-fixated media, I say, stop whining and subscribe to In These Times. Find In These Times on your newsstand or visit us online at www.inthesetimes.com or call 1-800-827-0270. That's 1-800-827-0270.
This is a WIN feature story. I'm Sarah Turner. George Bush will remain in the White House, and with Republican control of both the House and Senate and freed of re-election concerns, he has free rein to impose a so-called ownership society. This buzzword stands in for a host of policies Republicans are itching to thrust upon America.
I'd say that the hallmark of the ownership society is privatizing Social Security.
Gretchen Young is the Vice President of Government Affairs for Ann Consulting.
The two other major elements in the benefits arena are health savings accounts, where individuals take more responsibility, and then there's also an element in the retirement part of the agenda, which would emphasize something called a lifetime savings account.
Young says under the president's proposal, individuals would get a $300 grant to seed their health savings account, or HSA, and a $700 tax credit.
For people who did not want to go the HSA route, they would get a $3,000 tax credit for purchasing family health insurance or $1,000 for purchasing individual health insurance. So these will not cover the cost of health insurance, but these will certainly go a long way to helping these individuals get health insurance.
ownership society, what you find is that it's talking about ownership, but it mentions nothing about the precursor of ownership, which is income.
Jack Minnis is an economist.
Everything that Bush has done in the 3.5 years he's been in office is to curtail or suppress consumer income. And how one gets from lack of income to ownership is a mystery unless he is prepared to legalize bank robbery.
According to the Tax Foundation analysis of IRS statistics, 58 million income-earning households pay no income taxes, 94% of which earn less than $40,000 per year. So a health care tax break doesn't help low-income workers. With the Workers Independent News Service, I'm Sarah Turner.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
Iraq is the front in the war against terror. Might be because we invited them there. Perhaps there's some terrible clerical error. Maybe a faulty equation. Like 911 equals U.S. invasion.
Yeah, welcome back. 5 minutes before the hour. Well, you know, some set between 70 and 90%, depending on what survey you look at, of Bush voters actually believed that Saddam Hussein and Iraqis had something to do with 9/11. And didn't realize that 15 of the 19 hijackers were Saudis, and that Osama bin Laden was a Saudi who actually hated Saddam. But, you know, life goes on. 1-866-889-8894. Larry in Grand Rapids, Michigan on the line. Hey, Larry, welcome to the show.
Hi, Tom. Good to talk to you again.
Thank you.
A couple of things. First, I want to apologize to you for some of the people who claim to be Christians and are some of the nastiest people I've ever heard on your show.
Yeah, well, life in the big city.
For my wife and I, when we say we're pro-life, it involves voting, whatever, is a very small part of it. It's like working with people in poverty. It's this war that's killed 100,000 people. This is not pro-life position. I did have a couple of questions, though. The lady that you had on earlier.
Yeah.
Now, I'll be respectful about this, but I do think she was less than forthcoming about what she said. When you asked her what NARAL stands for, she said it doesn't stand for anything.
Well,
more.
It used to be something like the National Abortion Rights League or something like that.
Yeah, and my understanding, which is why I was hoping for some balance, is that that was primarily funded, at least in the past, and I could be wrong, by people who were in the industry that provides abortions.
Yeah, well, you know, that may well be, and what's wrong with that? I mean, the diabetes support societies that help out kids with diabetes are primarily funded by the manufacturers of insulin. The ADD groups that support kids with ADD are primarily funded by Ciba Geigy that makes Ritalin. I mean, you know, welcome to the real world.
I just wish she had been more forthcoming that when she said didn't mean anything. But
my question is what she is, you know, was she telling the truth or not? It seemed to me like she was not you know who's paying the bills.
Right. Well, I guess in the asking for fairness, would you allow somebody from the Right to Life to come in and present their side on the show so that people can hear both sides?
Well, if there is a side, I mean, what I don't want is this disinformation campaign that I hear from that side. But you know, yeah, have somebody contact me if you want. I'm really trying to say on this show with this issue and pretty much every other issue ultimately, this is what I think is just the truth. Here's the facts. You make up your mind.
Okay.
Not to try to imitate Fox News here.
No, and, I do. You know, so, I do applaud because I believe your personal balance and fairness.
Well, thank you. And you know, my email, tom@tomhartman.com. It actually comes to me, so you can drop me a note or put it on a message board or whatever.
Okay. Thank you, Tom.
Sure enough. Appreciate that, Larry. Thanks. It's the Tom Hartman Radio Program, where our talking points come from Jefferson and Madison, not some right-wing think tank or the RNC.
You've been listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Check our website at www.tomhartman.com for archives of this program and more information.
How can there
there be hope when millions starve in a world of plenty? How can there be justice when the rich parade their wealth before the poor? How can there be peace when each man is his neighbor's enemy? In a world of chaos, peace is possible, but only if we address the root causes of our global crisis, poverty, hunger, and despair. We must share the world's resources to create justice. Without justice, there can be no peace. Fortunately, we're not alone in our efforts. According to futurist Benjamin Krem, a group of enlightened teachers led by Maitreya, the world teacher, is here to inspire a new approach based on the principle of sharing. With their guidance, we can transform the world and create a peaceful future for all. For a free audio CD of an extraordinary lecture by Benjamin Krem on the emergence of the teachers, call toll-free 888-242-8272. Again, that's 888-242.
Pop and not-so-pop culture, democracy and the news of the day. This is the Tom Hartman Program.
You're listening to WIN, the Workers' Independent News Service. I'm Jesse Russell.
And I'm Doug Cunningham.
By the end of this year, the country's second-largest telephone company plans to eliminate 10,000 U.S. jobs, reducing its workforce by more than 6%. The cuts at SBC come on top of 7,000 jobs already lost this year through what the company calls normal attrition. The company is adjusting to a changing market where more and more people are replacing their landlines with cell phones and internet calling. To date, SBC has sent more than 4,500 jobs overseas.
George Bush will remain in the White House, and with Republican control of both the House and the Senate and no concerns regarding re-election, he has free rein to implement campaign promises of a so-called ownership society. That buzzword stands in for a host of policies Republicans are itching to thrust upon America.
I'd say that the hallmark of the ownership society is privatizing Social Security.
Gretchen Young is the Vice President of Government Affairs for Aon Consulting.
The two other major elements in the benefits arena are health savings accounts, where individuals take more responsibility, and then there's also an element in the retirement part of the agenda, which would emphasize something called a lifetime savings account.
Jack Minnis is an economist.
Everything that Bush has done in the 3.5 years he's been in office is to curtail or suppress consumer income. And how one gets from lack of income to ownership is a mystery unless he is prepared to legalize bank robbery.
According to the Tax Foundation analysis of IRS statistics, 58 million income-earning households pay no income taxes, so a health care tax break doesn't help low-income workers.
Workers are returning to the casinos in Atlantic City after more than a month of inability to reach a compromise. Employees from Harris Entertainment accepted a contract and ended their strike when the company began hiring replacement workers. Represented by the Hotel and Restaurant Employees Union, the workers were demanding a contract that would expire at the same time as those in Las Vegas. The casino chain refused to back down, as it would have given the union massive bargaining power by shutting down casinos in two major markets. The union says that Harris blinked first, as the company gave concessions on the most important issues, such as pay and health care.
Here's today's Dow Bob report. There were 708 mass layoff actions in September of this year. Total number of workers laid off in September from those actions, nearly 69,000. From January through September of 2004, there were 11,725 mass layoff actions, hitting 1,187,546 workers. Manufacturing had 27% of all those mass layoff actions and 37% of the workers laid off. The numbers come from the Bureau of Labor Statistics.
You've been listening to WIN, the Workers' Independent News Service. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
What does corporate power have to do with disarmament? How does working for racial justice affect trade agreements? And what do they all have to do with the Cuban blockade? Having trouble making a connection? It's our specialty. The Women's International League for Peace and Freedom, for 88 years, connecting the issues for democracy and social justice. Why don't you connect with us? WILPF.org or call 215-563-7110.
Time for another report from the wide, 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 wild world of sports. Today's feature, where are we? I don't mean where does your team rank in the standings. In today's corporatized sports world, the question of where are we is a literal one, as in what city are we in?
Stadiums, arenas, and so forth no longer bear recognizable names, but instead are branded with corporate logos that are anywhere and nowhere USA. For example, SBC. What the hell is it? It's the nondescript logo of a telephone company that stretches from Texas to Michigan to California. So if you're at SBC Park, where are you? The San Francisco Giants recently sold the name of their ballpark to this Anyplace Corporation. There's also the SBC Center. Where are you? At the arena of the San Antonio Spurs basketball team. In either case, SBC's bland corporate logo tells you nothing about the team or the city. It's just another symbol for corporate money. AmeriQuest Field, FedEx Forum, Pepsi Center, American Airlines Arena, Wachovia Center, Invesco Field, Reliance Stadium, Nationwide Arena, M&T Bank Stadium, Staples Center, Phillips Arena. Where are we? In pro sports, more than half of the facilities, most built with taxpayer funds, now have corporate names plastered all over them. The corporations have paid $3.6 billion to team owners to put their brands on these places. Money that, believe it or not, is tax deductible for the corporation, so we subsidize the branding. The corporate rationale is that naming deals are good advertising. Continually seeing our name, says a spokesman for Petco, which recently bought the naming rights to the ballpark of the San Diego Padres, will click with people and say, I want to shop there. This is Jim Hightower saying, oh yeah, after watching a Padres game, I always say, I think I'll run out to Petco and buy a rat terrier.
What does corporate power have to do with disarmament? How does working for racial justice affect trade agreements? And what do they all have to do with the Cuban blockade? Having trouble making a connection? It's our specialty. The Women's International League for Peace and Freedom, for 88 years, connecting the issues for democracy and social justice. Why don't you connect with us? WILPF.org or call 215-563-7110.
It's a wild day here at the stock market. Let's talk to some traders. How are you doing?
I'm taking a shelling, but I'm still gelling.
Okay, and how about you?
I'm gelling and selling. Gelling and selling.
My trades are smelling.
Mine too, but who cares?
We're gelling.
Are you gelling yet? Dr. Scholl's massaging gel insoles are made from the softest gel ever created. If you and your feet don't feel outrageously comfortable, you get your money back. Guaranteed. Are you gelling? Dr. Scholl.
He's the man who uncovers corporate lies, exposes political corruption, and has a clear vision of what America could become. Here's Tom Hartman.
And welcome back, my friends. Tom Hartman here with you. We have kind of done this election thing to death. I suppose we can discuss it in this third hour if anybody wants to call about it, but I think we've had our... I've said my piece on it. Our number, 1-866-889-8894. The website, TomHartman.com, if you want to drop into our chat room. Pleased to have you there for one of the most stimulating conversations on the Internet. Of course, our program on radio stations coast to coast, beaming down from outer space on Sirius satellite and streaming around the planet on radiopower.org. Glad to have you back up, Shelby, and the folks at radiopower.org. Radiopower.org, a listener-supported web radio station. Don't forget to click the yes, we're going to send our support if you're listening that way. Anyhow, welcome back to our program. The Arctic... This in the news. This is actually all over the news. I mean, this is a big deal. The Arctic is warming much more rapidly than previously known, at nearly twice the rate of the rest of the globe, and increasing greenhouse gases from human activities are projected to make it warmer still, according to an unprecedented four-year study of the region conducted by an international team of 300 scientists. They're talking about over the course of probably in the lifetime of our grandchildren and perhaps our children. By our, I'm talking about, you know, us old farts in our 50s. I may not live to see this, although it looks like it's already starting. In the north, the impacts of global warming are affecting people now in the Arctic, said Robert Correll, chair of the ACIA. This is the group that did the research. The Arctic is experiencing some of the most rapid and severe climate change on Earth.
The impact of climate change in the region and the globe are projected to increase substantially in the years to come. Part of the problem is that as the snow melts off and the tundra is exposed, tundra is darker, so it absorbs more sunlight, and so you have this what's called positive feedback. Because it's darker, it absorbs more sunlight, it gets warmer, and so it melts more of the snow around it more rapidly, which exposes more of the dark tundra, which warms up more rapidly, which burns off more of the snow. And it's just a snowball effect, snowball down the hill, perhaps an anti-metaphor there. At least half of the summer ice sheet in the Arctic is projected to melt by the end of this century. Now, what's that going to mean? Well, number one, it could mean that the Great Conveyor Belt, the thermohaline circulation that brings warm water from the Pacific up through the up across the equator and the Atlantic up into the North Sea, what we call the Gulf Stream, could shut down. If that happens, it'll throw Europe and perhaps the northeastern parts of the United States and Canada into another ice age. That could happen. Perhaps you saw the movie, you know, The Day After Tomorrow. It would take a year or two to happen, though, and the movie had happened in an afternoon. But that's, you know, you're making a movie. I mean, you know, it would happen still relatively quickly if it were to happen. And we're looking at sea level rises of roughly 23 feet, which means that good chunks of Florida and Louisiana will be underwater. Maybe New York City is going to start resembling Venice. Polar bears will be driven to extinction. Lots of interesting stuff going on here. The EPA is now paying families in Florida to expose their children to pesticides. Get this. This study is funded by 135 companies. The American Chemistry Council, which represents 135 companies, including pesticide manufacturers, has funded the Children's Environmental Exposure Research Study. They're looking at 60 infants and toddlers. And there are some folks saying, this ain't right. The U.S. EPA is the Environmental Protection Agency. Now, again, we have in virtually all of the watchdog groups in the federal government now have leaders or major leadership appointed by the Bush administration who came out of the industries that these groups regulate. The EPA being no exception. So now they're, you know, in bed with the American Chemistry Council, and they're doing this research. They're going to pay families $970 to let their kids be exposed to high levels of pesticides for 2 years. There's no provision for intervening if the toddlers or infants show signs of developmental problems as a result of it. They don't inform the participants about the safe or proper ways to store pesticides around the home. And when this issue came to light, the EPA's response, they took down the page on their website that talked about it. The American Chemistry Council, this is a report from yubanet.com, yubanet.com. The American Chemistry Council, which contributed $2 million to CHEERS, that's this program, also successfully lobbied to include exposure to flame retardants and other household chemicals in the study. EPA defends the industry involvement, pointing to 80 similar research agreements it has with industry. What has happened to government of, by, and for we the people? It has almost entirely during the Bush administration here, although this is a creeping process, began with the Reagan administration. Clinton slowed it down quite a bit. It actually reversed a lot of it. But just, you know, this has exploded in the Bush administration, where the regulatory agencies are now being controlled by and funded by those who are regulated. And we wonder why cancer is exploding in the United States. We wonder why there's so much mercury in the air from these power plants getting into the rain, that's getting into the water, that's getting into our fish, that's getting into pregnant women, that we're having an epidemic of autism and other birth defects, mercury-related birth defects. Gee, what a surprise. Let's take a few calls. 1-866-889-8894, telephone number. Dave in Humboldt County on the line in Humboldt County, California. Dave, welcome to the program.
Good morning, Tom, and help is not on the way as of the moment, but
I think, you know, we're still here, Dave. I mean, you know, it's George W. won the smallest Electoral victory, the smallest return victory since Woodrow Wilson in 1916 for an incumbent sitting president. More people voted for John Kerry, voted against George W. Bush, than have ever voted for any presidential candidate in the history of the United States. Yes, George did get more votes, apparently, and let's assume that that's the case for the moment, until or unless some really solid evidence is. And that's an issue that I think, many of us need to address. What have we done wrong with regard to communicating our message? Because when you poll the American people and you say, do you want Social Security? Do you want a living wage? Do you want clean air? Do you want clean water? Do you not want industry in the, running the regulatory agency? They're on our side. And these guys somehow managed to manipulate people with number one, lies about thinking that Saddam Hussein somehow had something to do with 9/11, the whole Fox News big lie thing, and being afraid of guys kissing. As if this is the end of civilization, into giving up their pocketbook issues. And this is as much a failure in my part of the Democratic Party as it is a success of the Republicans. Pardon the rant, Dave. Your turn.
A lot of us love what you've been trying to do, Tom. I've got 57 questions in my head here, but I'll cut
down. Let's take one.
Do you know in the districts that had the automatic voting machines untraceable, do you know how, other than president, vice president did, how did the congressmen do in those districts? Have you any idea on that?
I've seen some people who've compiled some statistics. I mean, after I wrote this piece on Common Dreams this weekend, I got literally probably close to 1,000 emails. In fact,
you'd also asked if there's anybody
that's buried in this stuff. I've seen a bunch of different information, and I can't say that any of it is conclusive. That is to say, I am not the kind of scientist. I'm not a scientist. I can't do this kind of analysis. I think that what I've done and what a number of other people in the media have done by raising this issue is we've started those people who are the kinds of people who can do an analysis, who have the credentials to do it, on the path, and we'll see where it goes.
You'd also ask if there's people who can't get into the chat room. I'm one of them, but that's nothing new. I'm never permitted in. There's been posters on C-SPAN.
I think, Dave, you got to take a cookie from CompuServe, which might mean selectively allowing that going into your preferences, into your internet preferences, and into the privacy tab, and editing that to allow a cookie from CompuServe.com. I may be wrong, but I'm guessing that that's the problem that most people are having, and that's because usually chat sites and websites like that use a cookie to know who you are. It doesn't like track you or anything. It just, when you come in, it notices the cookie and it goes, "Oh, you're Dave." That's all.
There's some national pollsters been on C-SPAN today, Republican and Democrat, and they're giving us quite a message. And it is that they're not at all optimistic. They think probably this represents the virtual end of any power for the Democratic Party. They also believe that none of them actually honestly thought that Bush had any chance of winning. They all feel that he was in a very weak position with respect to any number of issues.
Yeah. See, I'm sorry, Dave. I don't think that this is the end of the Democratic Party. And again, I'll say I'm not a Democrat. But I don't think that this is the end of the Democratic Party. Not by a long shot. There are just a mind-boggling number of people voted Democrat this time. I mean, just the larger number than ever before. And it's not like those people are just going to go away. I mean, a 1% majority, yeah, okay. 2% majority, Bush and Bush get a couple million more votes. Yeah, I tip my hat to him and Karl Rove. They did a good job. And I hope that they govern this nation well. I really do. I really and truly do. But it doesn't mean, in my opinion, that the Democratic Party is dead.
Our strongest contender was defeated by the Republicans' weakest. In effect, that's what their polls show.
Yeah, but, I'm just not going to go there, Dave, I appreciate the call, but to me, these are the Republican talking points that are filtering out into the media once again. I mean, they come out every morning. The talk show hosts get these talking points. I get them. And it's not that simple. It's just not that simple. And the Democratic Party has a lot of vitality and a lot of power and a lot of energy, and it's going to stick around. Trust me. And those of us who are progressives, I think we need to be active in our local parties, whatever that may be. Here in Vermont, it's the Progressive Party. In most states, it's the Green Party. And we need to also be active in the Democratic Party. We need to be helping the Democratic Party move toward progressive values. Michael in Santa Fe, New Mexico on the line. Hey, Michael, welcome to the program.
Hey, Tom. Can you hear me?
I can.
Oh, I'm sorry. A little bit on the subject of last hour. I rented a Triumph of the Will this weekend, and what I was subjected to was a 108-minute Walmart commercial. This was amazing, and that way it hit me was I was watching it, and I flipped over back to my TV to watch Karl Rove on Tim Russert, and up popped a Walmart commercial, and it just hit me. It was the same propaganda techniques, you know, of image, smiling, happy people.
Isn't Triumph of the Will an amazing movie? I mean, this was the propaganda piece that Leni Riefenstahl did in 1934 about the Nuremberg rallies that Hitler required every theater in Germany to play before every movie. And it was
just mapped, beautifully filmed and shot. Just wonderful. And I just was so shocked at how... You know, and then I realized, you know, it kind of hit me on the election that actually Bush actually won this thing honestly. It was because of these propaganda techniques.
Yes,
we have to figure out a way to overcome them.
Yeah, and that's the problem. I mean, you don't want to become the enemy in order to defeat the enemy, or even necessarily use the phrase enemy. But good point, Michael. I'm glad you watched the movie. We'd recommended it as our book of the month last month on BuzzFlash, and it's a shocker. 20 minutes past the hour.
I guess I better let the dog in.
Like the small dog that rules the house, Small Dog Electronics is the small computer company that really rules when it comes to customer service. Small Dog Electronics is your authorized Apple reseller in Wakefield, Vermont. Sure, you can buy your computer out of a catalog, but how do you know you're really getting what you want or what you need? At Small Dog, they don't work on commission. Their only motivation is making sure you're a happy customer. Put your business on the leading edge with the world's fastest computer. The new Macintosh G5. You'll finish the job ahead of the pack, and automatic security updates lock out viruses. That speed and dependability that will keep you focused on your customers instead of sitting on hold with tech support.
I guess you want to get on the couch, huh?
Like the small dog who everybody makes room for, Small Dog Electronics is big on customer service. Small Dog Electronics. Check them out on the web at smalldog.com or at their showroom on Route 100 in Waitsfield.
No way. You're not getting on the bed.
If it weren't for In These Times, I'd be a man without a country, says author Kurt Vonnegut. For more than 27 years, the progressive news magazine In These Times has provided groundbreaking coverage of movements for social, environmental, and economic justice. It is the publication the scholar and activist Cornel West calls the most creative and challenging news magazine of the American left. In These Times features award-winning reporting and analysis of national and international news. Turn to In These Times for stories on civil liberties, the environment, labor, feminism, and much more. Writer Barbara Ehrenreich put it this way, to people who say they are sick of the corporate-dominated and celebrity-fixated media, I say, stop whining and subscribe to In These Times. Find In These Times on your newsstand or visit us online at www.inthesetimes.com or call 1-800-827-0270. That's 1-800-827-0270.
Tonight on American Dreams, a family strength is tested.
I don't think your brother's coming home.
And an explosive all-new Law & Order Criminal Intent. A family's dead. Car accident or murder. This is one mother of a story. Then, an NBC event. Crossing Jordan teams up with a cast of Las Vegas. Two shows, one murder.
What happens in Vegas?
Apparently dies in Boston.
American Dreams, Law & Order Criminal Intent, and Crossing Jordan. NBC tonight.
Given to Halliburton in their no-bid contract in Iraq would make you think that it is not a regular practice. But a new report from the Center of Public Integrity reveals that at least $362 billion was spent on no-bid contracts by the Pentagon since 1998. But the Pentagon did not stop there, rewarding $255 billion in cost-plus contracts that allow companies to spend as much as they deem necessary on a job, including an agreed-upon profit.
How can there be hope when millions starve in a world of plenty? How can there be justice when the rich parade their wealth before the poor? How can there be peace when each man is his neighbor's enemy? In a world of chaos, peace is possible, but only if we address the root causes of our global crisis, poverty, hunger, and despair. We must share the world's resources to create justice. Without justice, there can be no peace. Fortunately, we're not alone in our efforts. According to futurist Benjamin Krem, a group of enlightened teachers led by Maitreya, the world teacher, is here to inspire a new approach based on the principle of sharing. With their guidance, we can transform the world and create a peaceful future for all.
For a free audio CD of an extraordinary lecture by Benjamin Krem on the emergence of the teachers, call toll-free 888-242-8272. Again, that's 888-242-8272.
This is the Democracy Zone with Tom Hartman.
Working in a coal mine, going on down. Now working in a coal mine, about to slip down. Working in a coal mine, going on down. Now
and welcome back. 24 minutes past the hour. Antidepressants might rewire young brains. This is one of the most disturbing pieces of science I've read in a long time. Those of you who are longtime listeners know you know that I'm a science junkie and have subscribed, I think, probably since I was a teenager, to Science News, which is one of the best summary weekly magazines of the science press. And here they're finding, this was a study that was done on mice, because you can't cut up little kids' brains to see what happened. But what they found with mice was that when they were young and they gave them SSRI drugs, selective serotonin reuptake inhibitor drugs, that is, drugs like Prozac and Wellbutrin, that actually altered the way their brains were developing, so that later in life they were more likely to be depressed and to be anxious and to not be able to deal with stress and anxiety. It actually rewired their brains, which makes perfect sense. You know, the brain is plastic. It's growing throughout childhood. It's trying to figure out how many serotonin receptors and proceptors and releasers it needs. And if you've got a drug that's suppressing the reuptake of serotonin, that's increasing the amount of serotonin, then the brain's not going to produce as many, you know, cells or parts that are producing serotonin. And then you get older, you stop taking the drug, and now you don't have enough serotonin, so you're more likely to be depressed. Here's according to Gingrich, unfortunately named head of the research group. This was published in Science, by the way, last week, the journal Science. The research suggests that the serotonin transporter plays a pivotal role in normal brain function. Consequently, if SSRIs block the transporter's function while the brain is still developing, they could permanently disrupt mechanisms that control mood. After these mice, for example, they gave these mice as babies, the equivalent of, you know, being 8 years old in a person, as the equivalent of being kids. They gave them these drugs, and after they matured, the scientists exposed them to several stressful situations, such as mild foot shocks or new cages, compared with normal mice that didn't receive the drug during their development. The mice that had received fluoxetine, that's Prozac, earlier in life, showed more signs of anxious and depressed behaviors. I still have yet to find a single case of a kid who committed homicide in his school who wasn't on one of these drugs. Maybe I'm wrong on this. I don't know. I've been looking around, and I know a bunch of other people have been too. This is scary stuff. 27 minutes past the hour. 1-866-889-8894 is our telephone number. Kevin in Florida is on the line. Hey, Kevin, welcome to the program.
Hi, Tom. I'm calling back as you had asked earlier.
Oh, that's right. You called at the bottom of, or just before we wrapped up the last hour.
Yeah, right before your guest came.
Yeah.
And I was telling you that I'm in the Dean group, and I participated in an interactive conference call with Howard Dean on Wednesday evening.
Uh-huh.
And he's saying basically what you're saying. And the Democratic Party is not falling apart. Your listeners, most people don't know this. The Democrats took over 7 state legislatures last week. They elected a fairly moderate to progressive Democratic governor in Montana, one of Howard Dean's endorsees, and he was really enthused about that one. And it really comes down to, and you'll probably like this, because the Tampa group for Dean here in Tampa,
mm-hmm.
We went to work for you at my suggestion.
Oh, that's sweet.
Well, basically what it is, and Dean was saying this, and I'm convinced of it, most people in this country don't get their news from TV. They're getting it from people like Rush Limbaugh and Michael Savage and so on and so on.
Yeah, talk, Ray, it's interesting, the stats on that. And Kevin, I'm going to ask you to hang on over the break here, because we do have to take a break here, and we'll come back to this. But the stats on that are really startling. The percentage of people who get their news or shape their worldview based on talk radio. And the correlation between people who do that, get their information from talk radio or from Fox News, and those who believe that Iraqis were flying the jets on 9/11. Scary stuff. 29 minutes past the hour.
At last, there's a positive focus on a condition that affects millions. Read The Edison Gene, ADHD and the Gift of the Hunter Child by Tom Hartman, best-selling author of Attention Deficit Disorder, A Different Perception. John Rady, author of User's Guide to the Brain, says this about the Edison Gene.
Once again, with tireless scholarship and a bit of poetry, Tom Hartman helps take us to the edge of knowing ourselves, our brains, and our world.
The Edison Gene, available in bookstores everywhere.
Pop and not-so-pop culture, democracy, and the news of the day. This is the Tom Hartman Program.
You're listening to WIN, the Workers' Independent News Service. I'm Jesse Russell.
And I'm Doug Cunningham.
By the end of this year, the country's second-largest telephone company plans to eliminate 10,000 U.S. jobs, reducing its workforce by more than 6%. The cuts at SBC come on top of 7,000 jobs already lost this year through what the company calls normal attrition, adjusting to a changing market where more and more people are replacing their landlines with cell phones and internet calling. To date, SBC has sent more than 4,500 jobs overseas.
George Bush will remain in the White House, and with Republican control of both the House and the Senate and no concerns regarding re-election, he has free rein to implement campaign promises of a so-called ownership society. That buzzword stands in for a host of policies Republicans are itching to thrust upon America.
I'd say that the hallmark of the ownership society is privatizing Social Security.
Gretchen Young is the Vice President of Government Affairs for Aon Consulting.
The two other major elements in the benefits arena are health savings accounts, where individuals take more responsibility, and then there's also an element in the retirement part of the agenda, which would emphasize something called a lifetime savings account.
Jack Minnis is an economist.
Everything that Bush has done in the 3.5 years he's been in office is to curtail or suppress consumer income. And how one gets from lack of income to ownership is a mystery unless he is prepared to legalize bank robbery.
According to the Tax Foundation analysis of IRS statistics, 58 million income-earning households pay no income taxes, so a health care tax break doesn't help low-income workers.
Workers are returning to the casinos in Atlantic City after more than a month of inability to reach a compromise. Employees from Harrah's Entertainment accepted a contract and ended their strike when the company began hiring replacement workers. Represented by the Hotel and Restaurant Employees Union, the workers were demanding a contract that would expire at the same time as those in Las Vegas. The casino chain refused to back down, as it would have given the union massive bargaining power by shutting down casinos in two major markets. The union says that Harrah's blinked first, as the company gave concessions on the most important issues, such as pay and health care.
Here's today's Dow Bob report. There were 708 mass layoff actions in September of this year. Total number of workers laid off in September from those actions, nearly 69,000. From January through September of 2004, there were 11,725 mass layoff actions, hitting 1,187,546 workers. Manufacturing had 27% of all those mass layoff actions and 37% of the workers laid off. The numbers come from the Bureau of Labor Statistics.
You've been listening to WIN, the Workers' Independent News Service. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
Fearlessly exploring the truth of the day, here's Tom Hartman.
What do you call a tax cut for the wealthiest 1%?
Homeland Security.
What do you call the other 99 who can't make the rent?
Homeland Security.
A lovely little bit of phraseology for all the neocon men when they announce a
preface it. What do you call the cable guy who's rifling through your mail?
Homeland Security.
I love it. And welcome back. Tom Hartman here with you, 27 minutes before the hour. 1-866-889-8894, our telephone number. Kevin's on hold. We're going to get back to I want to hear the rest of his story, because he's been very into this this Dean movement, which I find absolutely fascinating, and I want to learn a little bit more about it. But first, Victoria Jones is on the line with our daily news update from the Talk Radio News Service. Hey, Victoria, welcome to the program.
Well, thank you very much.
And you are located today where?
I'm in Washington, D.C. A little bit earlier, I was at the White House press briefing with White House Press Secretary Scott McClellan, as the president is in Washington today, so they're holding a press conference.
Oh, interesting. And yes. What's going on? What's the news from Washington?
Well, the news from Washington is, first of all, that Scott McClellan would not be drawn in any way on any appointments, resignations, or anything else with regard to staff, including himself, because he was asked whether he was going to continue or not. Also, there was some talk about Yasser Arafat's health and also, obviously, the attack on Fallujah that's going on. So really the main topic of conversation, I would say, is probably Fallujah, simply because Congress is out, so there are no congressional issues really to talk about except Alan Spector. And the real conversation is about the attack on Fallujah and the Defense Department Secretary Rumsfeld holding a press conference and taking questions about whether they, among other things, whether there's any way that they would make a decision as they did earlier in the year and pull back before the job was finished. And he's saying that he cannot imagine such a scenario.
Yeah, well, no, I don't think they will either. You know, I think that they'll kill as many people as it takes.
I think that they will do whatever they feel it needs to be done. Indeed,
yeah. This pro-life bunch here. It is just such a tragedy. It's unspeakable to me. I mean, 100,000 people dead, and they never attacked us. They didn't represent any threat to us. It's just of course. I mean, you know, who wants their country occupied by people who are, well, you've heard that rant before, you know that. So that's it in Washington. It sounds like kind of a slow news day, as it were.
It is kind of a slow news day. The Congress is back next week for its lame duck session, so that could be fairly lively because there are some lame ducks who want to quack.
Yeah.
And there's budgetary issues to be seen, too, and that's always fun.
Well, they got to raise the debt ceiling. Did that get raised?
Yes. I believe it did.
Yeah. Okay.
I get very confused when they start talking about the budget because they start speaking a language that I don't speak.
Yeah. Well,
And it may be that I'm dim, but I suspect that I'm probably similar to many Americans, so I suspect that it's a language most of us don't speak.
Well, the problem is there's the annual deficit, there's the total national debt, there's the trade deficit, and you know all of these are potential train wrecks, but people mix them all up in their minds.
These are all things that cause us to have calls from the collection agency by now.
Yeah. Yeah. There you go. Well, Victoria, thanks for the call, and thanks for the update.
Not a more exciting day, but it's one of those days where everyone's recovering, recouping, and getting ready for the next fight.
Yeah, I think a lot of us are just fine with a not very exciting day.
Exactly.
Just fine.
There's enough excitement last week.
There you go. Okay, we'll talk to you tomorrow.
Okay, thank
thanks,
you.
Thanks, Victoria. 1-866-889-8894. Let's go back to Kevin in Florida. Kevin, you've been part. What Dean's group is it? Democracy for America? Is that it?
Yeah, Democracy for America. He kept the DFA from Dean for America.
Ah, okay. Well, that makes sense.
Yeah.
And they're still using the meetup groups. I believe I still get these
Absolutely.
Things in the email asking me to show up, and it's you know, and I keep intent. It's so, you know, there have been so many times that I have intended to and just. You know, it's, well, what can I say?
Well, let me get
I'm making
to what
excuses.
He brought up, which is what I was thinking even before I listened to him, and you've been saying a lot of the same things. First, he said, as opposed to history, the Democratic Party cannot sit back now and then activate itself early in 2006, which is its history. It just sits back and does nothing until the next election starts.
Right. No, it's we need to be mobilizing and organizing right now, and we.
Well, we started
meaning,
November 3rd.
So. Yeah, way beyond the Democratic Party, in fact.
Now we were. I was talking about the talk shows and the power that they have.
Yeah.
The radio talk shows.
Yeah.
What we've done here in Tampa, you will like this. It was my suggestion, and actually, Rob McKenna, who you had on as a guest,
Mm-hmm.
Remember the election supervisor?
Yeah.
He lost, by the way, by 10 points.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah. But anyway, we have set out to locate a couple radio stations, one to put on syndicated people like yourself, maybe Lynn Coulter from Pittsburgh, and some others.
Yeah.
And also one for Air America. And as soon as we get the stations lined up, we'll be in touch with you so you can do your sales with them.
That's great.
And the thing is we feel that we can do this, and as soon as we get it done, we'll contact Democracy for America and get all their other chapters to do it.
Oh, that would be super. I mean, this is right-wing talk radio grew in to some substantial extent, as a grassroots phenomena. You know, people listening to Limbaugh, liking him, saying, "I want more of this," and the industry came along and said, "Okay, we'll give you more of this."
Yeah, and what happened is, and Howard Dean talked about this. People listen to them. They go home, like the 70% that believe that Saddam was involved with 9/11.
Right.
They go home and they see CBS and ABC and NBC saying that's not true. And they say, oh, well, that's just the liberal media.
Right. Right. Lying to me.
Right.
Like they do, you know.
Yeah.
Yeah. That NBC owned by General Electric, the company that makes nuclear bombs.
Well, if people start having alternative
nuclear power plants,
They will listen. And, like, don't you have a couple clear channel stations?
We're on one clear channel station.
You're on one.
Have been for about a year. Yeah.
Yeah. And, you know, I mean, they're for money. They're missing half the audience.
Yeah. Yeah.
Half
I know.
The commercials.
Yep. I know. I agree.
And that really is the way we have to go. And I also think, and I don't know if you noted, if you saw it, but I also read over the weekend that Bob Woodward had added some additions to his book. I forget the name of it. That book where he was in with Nixon all that time. I mean, with Nixon, with Bush.
Yeah, Bush at War.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And it seems that Karl Rove was delighting initially at the idea of having Howard Dean. And in February, he became convinced that Iraq was going to go the way it's going. And he, at that point, he got ecstatic, according to Woodward, that they were not facing Howard Dean.
Right. That was when, I thought the turning point came for Howard Dean when the Club for Growth came into Iowa with $1 million in their latte-drinking, Volvo-driving ad.
Yeah.
I mean, they did a character assassination on Dean. And provoking Dean and Gephardt to get into a bloodbath was, we can dissect this to death, but I was scratching my head going, why is one of the largest conservative groups in the United States spending millions of dollars in one state's primary in the Democratic primary? It must be they really are afraid of Howard Dean, and because the ads were specific attack ads against Dean.
Mm-hmm.
And hopefully he'll be back in 4 years.
One other thing. There's one other thing that he said, but before I get to that, very briefly, that question came up to him
mm-hmm.
about 2008. And in fact, he had called Rob McKenna about his election. He called all the people that he had personally endorsed.
Mm-hmm.
And Rob asked him, and he gave him the same answer he gave on the teleconference. He has made no decision about anything about what he's doing.
Yeah, that's the only rational decision that any politician can make for another 2 years at least. Yeah.
But anyway, the one thing, and this to me is the biggest thing. I am an attorney by training. I don't practice anymore. I used to. I don't now.
Mm-hmm.
But I've been involved almost my whole life in business and in sales. And I've always thought that conservatives do well because they market well.
Yeah.
Howard
it's true.
Is in the process of bringing in a linguistic expert to market progressive and liberal ideas.
Well, that's great. I mean, that's what I used to do for a living.
Yeah.
And,
you know, I mean, it all comes down to NLP.
Yeah.
I'm a great believer in NLP, and I think the Republicans use it terrifically.
Yeah.
You know, values is what you do by yourself sexually, as they put on the Clinton, and not that you go and kill people and start illegal and immoral wars.
Yeah.
It's all a matter of marketing.
Yep.
It's sad. That is very sad.
Yeah, it's branding and marketing. It's remarkable. Well, that's great news. Thanks for the report.
No, I would put my own message to all your listeners and everybody else is, don't give up.
No, never give up. No. To quote Churchill, never give up. Never give up.
Okay, Tom, have a great day.
Thanks, Kevin. I appreciate the call. Good to hear from you. 1-866-889-8894, our telephone number. Rick in Grand Rapids, Michigan on the line. Hey, Rick, welcome to the program.
Hey, that was a good Churchill imitation.
Yeah.
I wanted to respond, if I could, to the caller last hour that was trying to bait you with the question about Clinton and the majority of the popular vote.
Yeah, I still can't figure out what he was...
I know what he was trying to say. He was trying to say that even though Bill Clinton won twice, he had less than 50% of the popular vote, even though he won the Electoral College. Well, here, I have several answers for that gentleman, and I hope he's still listening. Number one, both times Bill Clinton ran, he had Ross Perot draining off votes from him and from the Republican candidate, in all fairness.
Right.
But let's look at some of our recent presidents. I shouldn't say recent. I guess the most recent example I would use would be Richard Nixon in 1968, and this is because of George Wallace. He only got 43% of the vote, and he was reelected. He was elected the first time in 1860, and this is going way back. Abraham Lincoln, who's considered by most people on both sides of the spectrum to be our greatest president, had 39% because he ran against three other people.
Yeah.
On the other hand, let's look at some of the people that won in landslides. Lyndon Johnson in 1964 won in a landslide. In 1968, he didn't even run for his party's nomination.
Right.
1972, Richard Nixon won in a landslide. 2 years later, he resigned under the specter of impeachement.
Right.
So we have to be careful about people that, you know, win their election in the 43 to 49% margin and say they then deserve to be president. And we can't be too carried away by people who win in a landslide, which Mr. Bush did not do, but there is also the historic fact that second terms can really be a bummer. So we'll see what happens. You know, for the sake
Rick, the message underneath the message of this whole thing of mandate or not mandate is the assertion by the Bushies that they therefore have the right to exercise the power to shove down the throats of all of America their agenda.
Exactly.
And that may be consistent with the old pure democracy thing of a 51% majority gets their say. It's not altogether consistent with the old republic notion, which used to be the favorite mantra of the conservatives, which is that, yes, the majority gets their say, but the minority's rights are protected, and there are certain standards that we have, that we hold, that even if the majority likes them, we're not going to hang on to. I mean, the majority of the South wanted segregation in the 1960s, we said, you know, and the government said, sorry, you can't have it, even though the majority of the South wanted it.
Yeah, another thing is, like you said, these Christians, and you were quoting someone else, I guess, but these Christian right folks may be sad to find out that their agenda is not necessarily going to be number one, you know, right up there the first thing to do. It'll be cutting taxes and privatizing Social Security and perhaps invading other countries.
And this whole gay marriage thing. I mean, Bush is going to do the same thing. He's not going to push hard for any kind of a constitutional ban on gay marriage.
Nope.
Because 4 years from now, they want to have, they want to trot it out again like another Halloween ghost and wave it around because it works so well.
I wonder what these log cabin Republicans think about all this.
I have a feeling that they're not happy. They're just not happy.
Thanks.
Yeah, thanks for the call. Good to hear from you. I appreciate it. 1-866-889-8894. Armin in Florida on the line. Hey, Armin, welcome to the show.
Thanks. I want to talk about two subjects, if I may. The first one being this Fallujah ordeal.
Yeah.
The question I have is, why is it when Saddam Hussein crushed the insurgents when he was in power in his country, he was portrayed as a brutal dictator that killed his own people? But the United States, with its oil military complex, quote, media alliance, can go over there illegally, crush a society of people that are resisted to their authoritarian rule and taking over their country and stealing their resources. And this criminal media portrays it as liberating the people or Operation Random Fury.
Well, actually, you know, they're pretty clear about it. We're crushing an insurgency, which is, as you say, the same thing Saddam did with the Shiites in the South when George H.W. Bush encouraged them to rise up and then refused to go to their defense when Saddam crushed that insurgency.
Well, or his own people, though, Tom, too. If you take it a different degree or a different direction, they ridiculed him and persecuted him everything, the media, this country, and the politicians for gain when he did the evil things he did to his own people. But the difference is it was his country, and those people were a threat to him. That's why he did it. You know that.
Sure.
But yet this country illegally invades another country and does all the horrible atrocities and then some to women. How many women did Saddam take out?
You know, I got to pause you though, Armin, because be careful. I mean, there's a line that you don't want to go over. I really do believe that the vast majority, I mean, like 99.9% of the people in our military who are over there really think that they're doing the right thing and want to be doing the right thing, and that our motives, at least at the level of the average soldier, and you know, I can't speak for Bush's motives, but our motives, I think, are idealistic and hopeful. We are not, well, it's hard to say. At the level of Bush and Rove, you could say, yeah, okay, we are grasping for power the same way that Saddam did. But I don't think you can draw moral equivalence. We're a very different nation than Saddam was. 10 minutes before the hour.
Bonjour. My name is Véronique Raskin. I founded the Organic Wine Company 25 years ago. If you love wine and have not tried our French wines, you are in for a treat. Nowadays, people everywhere are buying organic fruits and vegetables because they know they taste better. Organic grapes are so luscious. When turned into wine, you can really taste the difference with every sip. So our wines are delicious and eco-friendly. So I want to make it easy for you to try them out. Call me right away at 1-888-ECO-WINE and I will send you 3 of my favorite organically grown French wines at half off the regular price. That's just $25 plus shipping. Isn't that magnifique? I think so. If you don't share my enthusiasm, I'll gladly refund your money. So take me up on my offer and call me at 1-888-ECO-WINE. ECOWINE. Au revoir.
Visit iowapeace.com for books on justice and peace. The Last Liberal Outlaw is Mike Palasek's new novel. Chuck Gregory with BlueEar.com had this to say. Palasek is at his best when writing about small-town America. It's a place he clearly loves, even as he pokes fun at its quirks and reveals the sickness that lies just below the surface. It's a place he knows, and he shares his knowledge in delightfully original ways, even as he cries out for change. We haven't had a writer like Palasek since Kurt Vonnegut was at his peak. Mike is an Iowa author, former federal prisoner for peace, small-town newspaper reporter, seminarian, and nominee for the U.S. House of Representatives in the Iowa Democratic Party 2000 election. For more information and more about Mike's other novels, visit iowapeace.com. The revolution won't be televised, but you can read about it. The Last Liberal Outlaw, A New American Revolution, is happening in the heartland.
If it weren't for In These Times, I'd be a man without a country, says author Kurt Vonnegut. For more than 27 years, the progressive news magazine In These Times has provided groundbreaking coverage of movements for social, environmental, and economic justice. It is the publication the scholar and activist Cornel West calls the most creative and challenging news magazine of the American left. In These Times features award-winning reporting and analysis of national and international news. Turn to In These Times for stories on civil liberties, the environment, labor, feminism, and much more. Writer Barbara Ehrenreich put it this way, to people who say they are sick of the corporate-dominated and celebrity-fixated media, I say, stop whining and subscribe to In These Times. Find In These Times on your newsstand or visit us online at www.inthesetimes.com or call 1-800-827-0270. That's 1-800-827-0270.
This is a Workers Independent News Service feature story. I'm Sarah Turner. A recent report released by the Sierra Club, the United Steelworkers, SEIU, Unite Here, and others reveals clean energy policies would create at least 1 million new jobs in the United States.
Clean energy policies will create 1.4 million new jobs nationwide once the policies are implemented. These are policies for clean cars and clean energy.
Dan Becker, director of the Global Warming Program at the Sierra Club.
What the study did was it looked at what happens when we save energy. When you have a car that uses less gas, you're saving money on the gasoline. When you have refrigerators and light bulbs and other appliances that use less electricity, you're saving money on electricity. Rather than exporting that money to the Persian Gulf for oil or out of state to an electric utility, you get to spend that money on something else.
The report found that American households would save more than $1,000 annually by 2025. And Becker says increased consumer buying power helps all workers by creating jobs.
I think it became very clear that manufacturing jobs were being eroded not by environmental regulation in the United States, but by faulty trade agreements.
David Foster, District 11 Director for the United Steelworkers, sees a shift in the way union members view the environment.
We lost 3,500 steelworker jobs in the state of Minnesota. Every single one of them was lost because of trade agreements. Not a one of them was lost because of American environmental regulation.
In addition to increased jobs, Becker says clean energy policies would reduce global warming and protect the quality of our air, drinking water, and food.
No one knows better than workers that we need a clean environment. And the good news from this study is that we can have a clean environment and more jobs, that the two go hand in hand, and that's good for all of us.
With the Workers Independent News Service, I'm Sarah Turner.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
There's something wrong with the world today. I don't know what it is. Something's wrong.
Well, that might be called the Republican Party. 5 minutes before the hour. Welcome back. Tom Hartman here with you. 1-866-889-8894. Ray in Santa Fe, New Mexico on the line. Hey, Ray, what's on your mind?
Hey, Tom. Well, this whole past election, everything has completely radicalized me. I mean, I've always been more, you know, I had more radical beliefs than even the liberals. And I've always tolerated, you know, liberal ideas because I prefer them to the arch conservatives. But it seems to me almost now that, you know, the democratic process of voting for leadership is dogmatic, and that we need to take another approach.
For example?
Well, for example, you know, some stronger resistance. I mean, Martin Luther King was never elected. Gandhi was never elected. I mean, you know, somebody has to stand up and you know, throw down the gauntlet here.
Yeah, and in other words, you're calling for a movement of sorts. And
yeah,
and interestingly, Kevin tells us that Howard Dean is putting one together right
well,
now.
Well, I hope so. I mean, I like Howard Dean. I mean, even though, you know, I consider myself much more radical than him too.
Yeah, he's a fairly moderate guy, but
you know, if,
Democracy for America thing.
If he can start a movement, I almost feel like, you know, it almost will take some real radical movement to sort of rebalance, you know, our perspective.
I absolutely agree. I think we're at a moment that's very similar to that in the 1880s with the progressive and populist and Grange movements emerging, and the Democratic Party in disarray, and the Republicans totally corrupt, and it's just a mess. I appreciate the call. Thanks a lot, Ray. Good to hear from you. Let's go to number 12, taxi driver number 12 in Santa Fe, to wrap up the show here. Hey, number 12, what's on your mind?
I think you both got that caller's sentiment about Clinton wrong. I think basically what he was saying was, if Clinton had a mandate and the liberals loved him with 43%, then Bush should have that much more of a mandate with the percentage he got in the recent election.
Yeah, and if that was what he was trying to say, I would have agreed with him. I mean,
I mean, he's kind of like, he was baiting you and he was being very sarcastic and snide about it, but I think if he was just straight up and he said it, it would have been a lot more easier to figure out what he was trying to say.
He was playing word games. In my mind, the issue isn't mandate, not mandate, because I think that's a red herring. I think it's just a rhetorical device. In my mind, the issue is, you know, what can you get done? What can you get through Congress? You know, what are you going to try and do? And is it going to work? Is it going to succeed over the long term? And you know, politically, is it going to wipe out your party? I mean, there's a million practical considerations in all this stuff. Number 12, thanks for the call. I appreciate it.
Yep.
Thanks to Louise for producing our program today. Thanks to Rama Schneider for coming in and engineering it with us today. Very always nice to see you here on Mondays, Rama. Thanks to Brad Walrod for our music. Thanks to Shelby LaPree for getting RadioPower.org back up and running. Thanks to Ben Birch for the Archives of White Rose Society. Mike Toth for our Archives at TomHartman.com. Thanks to the folks in our chat room and to you for listening. See you tomorrow, same time, same place.
You've been listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Check our website at www.tomhartman.com for archives of this program and more information.
Visit iowapeace.com for books on justice and peace. The Last Liberal Outlaw is Mike Palasek's new novel. Chuck Gregory with BlueEar.com had this to say. Palasek is at his best when writing about small-town America. It's a place he clearly loves, even as he pokes fun at its quirks and reveals the sickness that lies just below the surface. It's a place he knows, and he shares his knowledge in delightfully original ways, even as he cries out for change. We haven't had a writer like Palasek since Kurt Vonnegut was at his peak. Mike is an Iowa author, former federal prisoner for peace, small-town newspaper reporter, seminarian, and nominee for the U.S. House of